Valuetown is a production of ChamMV TV. Find out all show information and details at chamamv.tv. Valuetown is directly supported by listeners like yourself via patreon.com/valuetown. What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 116 of Valuetown. I'm Chamman V, and he's Noxious. And Zalay's back with us.
Yo, what's up, guys?
What's up?
It's good to be back.
Yeah. Celebration time! I love it when you're
here. It's been a while, too, right? Dude.
It's been a long while.
Yeah,
man. Trinity series, man. That kept me away. It kept me busy.
Yeah. True. That is true.
It's a good run.
You got pretty far, right? But ended up falling to my teammates, I believe.
Yeah, and congrats to them. Well played to Complexity.
You had the sickest win rate, though, I think, right?
Yeah.
Am I wrong? Yeah, I think you had the best
win rate. Yeah, we had the sickest win rate.
That's right.
I felt like, there you go. I was really proud of us. I've never felt that good about losing a tournament, you know?
Yeah.
I was like, damn, we did good. We looked good.
It is true, though. The results in the end actually favored you in terms of win rate. So props. Big props.
Nice. Yeah, that's awesome. And, you know, of course, the Trinity series was great, too. And wouldn't be surprised to see another one in the summer sometime.
Fingers crossed, I believe.
So you can get your revenge. Get your revenge on Complexity.
I'm looking forward to it for sure.
Well, guys, it is the night before Christmas, or the night before
the night before Christmas.
This is better than Christmas. Exactly. Let's be real. We get actual adult presents. These are adult presents, right?
Yeah, these are adult presents. And not only that, we actually get an appetizer, which has been the Volcanosaur. Which a lot of people have been playing in the last, you know, 12 hours or so. You guys get a chance to play that at all?
I played against it. I devoured it. It was delicious.
Okay. All right. What'd they play? Did they play Paladin, Druid?
It was like a Reno Lock, and I beat him with Control Warrior.
Reno Lock?
He just jammed that one in there.
All right. All right. Sure.
I executed it and went about my day.
That's the thing, man. All these people playing, you know, Volcanosaur, and a lot of people I've been playing against play Paladin because I think they're trying to simulate Galvadon to a degree. So it's almost pants-like, but not quite, obviously. And it's just like, okay, well, I just wait for my Twisting Nether.
It doesn't do anything in that case.
Yeah. Exactly.
So I made the mistake, actually, of I was playing Milrogue in Wild, and, you know, giving Druids card draw is never, you know, the best thing in the world, but sometimes it works out. Yeah. So he played the Adaptazor or Volcanosaur, the Adaptazor. Here we go.
Pretty much how he started. Pretty much an Adaptazor.
He played Volcanosaur, and I'm just like, well, okay, I can't really deal with this 5/9 that can be targeted by spells and hero powers, so let's let it sit there for a little bit until I find Vanish. So I draw and draw and draw, and lo and behold, I draw enough that I never find Vanish, but he finds like double Menagerie Warden while I'm drawing, so he just copies that Volcanosaur twice, and I've had like this massive board filled with nothing but 5/9 that can't be targeted, and I just don't know what's going on anymore.
Can we just say that all they had to do was release one card into Standard for us to all realize how broken Bran is with all these new cards?
Bran Adapt.
Exactly, Bran Adapt, and I mean, there's so many battle cries. There's like 50 battle cry, 60 battle cry cards in this entire set. So Wild's gonna be crazy. And I mean, we're gonna
Bran Galvadon.
That's the most win more nonsense I've ever heard.
I know, it is.
Less than your deck.
Galvadon's
right?
Like, already winning single handedly, and you're just like, let's slap another, you know, 5 adapts on this guy.
Hitting up for 30 is not enough. We're going to need 60.
Exactly.
We're going to need a bigger dinosaur.
And my Twisting Nether does the same thing. Whether it's 30 or 60, it doesn't matter.
Death Rattle, resummon this minion. No.
Yeah.
This would have been sick.
So for the folks that haven't logged in, go ahead and log in to Hearthstone. You will get a free golden Volcanosaur. And if you want to play, you know, Volcanosaur decks, you can go and craft one, but I haven't done that. I just can't bring myself to actually craft something I'll probably get tomorrow. So I held off on that. But it's fun to see a lot of streamers and everything playing Volcanosaur. And again, just a little bit of a preview into tomorrow, which is going to be insane. And in terms of the decks, how have you guys just been building, Angora decks or decks you're going to be trying out tomorrow in a lot of these deck builders?
Yep. I've been working on that. That's something I've been doing on my stream the past few days, mm-hmm. Deck here and there.
Yeah.
Did some deck building with Firebat with Jackie Chan.
Good oh times. God, that's a good, that's a good team cool. right there. Yeah.
Yeah.
The meme team.
That's pretty much what I've been doing too. And it's been, I have to say guys, it's been super fun. Like I like cherish this like point in each expansion when, we can't quite play them yet. So, there's no deck, there's no net decking so much right now and people sharing on all the different deck websites. So it's all this like problem solving and brainstorming and puzzles, solving puzzles and seeing how you can abuse certain cards. It's fun. Just take this card. How can we abuse it? And just going through that exercise. It's
totally agree.
Yeah.
This is absolutely the best part of Hearthstone. New decks.
Woo. Exactly. And that's all going to end in the next week.
I'm so bummed out because I feel like the more I deck build ahead of time, the quicker I get bored with the deck building. Like I feel like I already map out so much. When I've done it last time with Mean Streets, mm-hmm. I had the Zoo Paladin ready. I had the Hand Buffeted that fell apart. I had the Hunter list. I had a few of them ready. I had Kazakus list for every single class. And I felt like, maybe MSOG, like Mean Streets, was so straightforward that it didn't really evolve enough, right? Like it did. We got Coin Rogue. Water Rogue, that is later in the expansion. We got Reno Mage like a month and a half in that was finally refined. But I feel like Mean Streets, within like 2 weeks, not enough came up after I started deck building ahead of time. This time around, though, I'm pretty sure there are enough like build arounds that stuff's just going to come out. And I must say one thing, though, is that I love how the quests, even though they're parasitic and that they want you to build around them so hard that it feels like it's obvious, it really isn't. There are so many ways to build around each quest that it becomes like this super big experiment for players.
Yeah, anything really stood out like that to you, Zalay? Like just Nox just noticing that type of thing.
I hope that the quests aren't that good, and I kind of think that for the most part they probably won't be. And the reason I hope that they aren't that good is just because it feels a little bit like the Jade mechanic where they kind of just spoon feed you like, hey, here's this deck, just play it. So hopefully there's more going on than that. And I do think there will be more going on than that. Like we're for sure in for bigger changes than other sets mm-hmm. in the past because of the standard rotation. Six key cards rotating out of standard, Ice Lance, Power Overwhelming, Conceal, Azure Drake, Sylvanas, and Ragnaros, right? And then on top of that, just three giant sets go away. And that leaves a huge power vacuum where all of these staple cards that just automatically went in deck no longer exist. And we've got to find new ways to play something else in those card slots. And so there's definitely gonna be a lot of new stuff to figure out based on that. And I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Like when I was doing a lot of the brainstorming, what I realized that is that when I was reviewing the cards, I had this, I guess I had this feeling that certain decks would be super easy to build. And when I actually went through the exercise of trying to build them, I realized, okay, it's not quite as easy as I thought, building even something very, very simple, like even the elemental deck. Everybody was just like, oh, elemental deck is going to be like super simple to build. It's actually not as easy to do it versus other decks. It relatively probably still is easier. But what I ended up feeling too is that there's potential for high skill cap decks. And that's the part that kind of got me excited. And I'm hoping, that the meta, I'm sure when it first starts that we're going to see some, fairly simple, not as high skill cap decks be powerful. But
I'm in charge now.
Exactly, right, exactly. But I feel like there is potential for that. And that includes the quests too. I think the quests are a bit parasitic, but at the same time, some of them are just hard to get there, and not die before that. And for folks that are, super great deck builders and even super great navigators, that's basically the formula for a high skill cap deck. And I'm excited for that to potentially be the case. And in the beginning, first weeks, it's going to be simple stuff. Like it's going to be very simple. Just beat you down with like what we've always seen in Hearthstone. And then eventually, hopefully we refine into something cool. But today we're going to talk about some of the decks that we've been working on. It's going to be a mixture of good stuff that we think tomorrow would be great to climb ladder with, to just crazy meme conceptual type of things. And then we're going to talk about our top
five. Ladder. I'm not so sure about climbing the ladder, but yeah, crazy memes. I'm down.
It's us. I mean, it's, you know, that's what we do, right? But okay, so why don't we jump into some decks that we've been working on, and then we'll kind of conclude with our top five cards of the set, at least pre-release. We can be bold. We can be wrong. It's all good. But there's a lot of cards to choose from, that's for sure. Okay, well, let's go to this view here. Oh, actually, not this view. Dang it. I gave you a quick preview. Why don't we talk about a deck that we think is going to be strong tomorrow? Like, if you guys want to climb the ladder tomorrow, what should you be playing? And Zlay, I'll let you play this one.
Probably Pirate Warrior. It lost literally one card, Finley. And Finley's really was a great card in Pirate Warrior, so that loss hurts. But if you look at what other decks lose, like look at Aggro Shaman. It lost Tunnel Trog and Totem Bulb. Holy cow. Talk about just obliterating an archetype. Or if you look at Dragon Priest, it's all gone. It's gone. There's nothing there anymore, yeah. Right? Pirate Warrior was arguably the best deck, or it was like in contention for it kind of thing, and it lost one card, Finley. And so the idea with this deck is it's something you can play on day one with zero new cards and win some games if that's what you feel like doing. Because Finley is no longer in the deck, the water package of Finja and Murloc War Leader and Bluegill Warrior got better, because Finja pulling out of Finley was always like a big downside that really weakened the package. So now that Finley's no longer an option, the Finja package gets better. So you just jam that in there. And, you know, here's something you could play on day one. It's not sexy, but it'll work.
Yeah. I think it's sexy. Pirates and Murlocs in the same deck. I'm going to go ahead and call it sexy. I like the fact that that's a thing, right? Yeah. Like, Rogue has been doing this for a while, but they don't really go full pirate. They play, like, they okay one drops, you know, the South Sea deck hand has removal. So it's not, you know, a pirate deck that goes face in the way that it seems like we've been building pirates for a while now. It's much more for the utility of just getting patches out for an extra ping. More so than anything else. I really like the idea of putting Finja in there.
I think I had this URL wrong. That's why it's not loading. So give me a second so you guys can see it all. I think you guys get the gist of it, though. It is definitely all the old stuff.
I mean,
you know, with minus Sir Finley, like you said. So
if the video is not working, I can just say it. It's like the old Pirate Warrior had like 26 standard cards or something like that, and mm-hmm. Finley rotated out, and basically some of the tech cards like Bash and Mortal Strike got cut. There's only one South Sea Captain in this list, and you add in two Bluegills, two War Leaders, and a Finch.
But I'll ask something, though. Like, do you think, because there's a lot of really good taunts on curve coming out, right? There's a lot of them. And my question is yeah. Taunt Warrior going to be a natural stopgap to Pirate Warrior? Because even though you do get good trades with upgrade and bigger weapons, aren't you going to be stopped by people who just go, hey, I'm going to complete the warrior quest and win the game that way?
Yeah.
I think it's possible to build a warrior quest deck that beats these aggro decks. Whether it's going to be an effective deck in the metagame remains to be seen. Like, maybe Jade decks will still be too oppressive for that kind of strategy to be popular. But, you know, I threw something together to try and attempt it, right? Like, the warrior quest is, I think, very powerful. Sulfurous was in contention for my top five favorite cards in the set.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
I mean, anything that makes you turn into Ragnaros is sweet, right?
Yeah.
I'm not a huge fan of the card personally, but
you're not. I like powerful hero powers. Like, I like turning into Jiraxxus.
Yeah, I just don't like the rag hero power all over again. Like, if the deck becomes good, I can't wait. Like, I hope it's not something you see in tournament play where right. The guy just jams a hero power every turn and then just coin flips his way to. We saw way too much of that.
What was the cool part about that? I mean, this is kind of getting off to a little bit of a tangent, but the cool part about Sulfurous and it being random like that is, you know, when you're building the deck, what you quickly realize is that, you know, you need stuff to accompany that, you know, because there's no tempo on the board, and you're randomly just shooting at things. You know, people are going to be putting tokens and stuff on the board, so you need a way to, you know, whether it's Primordial Drake to clear stuff so that you get a higher chance of shooting what you want, or it's some other way to finish games too alongside the hero power. You don't really notice that until you're just like, oh, I get so fierce, I'm just going to win. Like, I'm going to win after three turns, but that's not the case. Like,
no,
I can put Silverhand Recruit, I can put Totems, I can put all this stuff to make the probability a lot worse for you with that card. But it is really good though. It's a weapon too, which is insane.
So, I guess I like, I don't, at some point if you throw enough Ragnaros fireballs, it becomes less random. Like if you throw enough of them, at some point it just consistently is eventually gonna kill them. So
it is.
Yeah, you don't want to kill them with that hero power, right? You really want to be killing minions, because that's right. That's like a control deck where you're just trying to outlast and survive. That's actually, I think, a big downside of the quest is that once you get the quest off and you get this rag hero power, up to 50% of the time, your hero power just goes face and does almost nothing for your gameplay.
Right. Right.
This is why you play Alexstrasza, right?
It's not an auto win.
switch the tempo. Sorry, putting them at 15. So wherever it goes, it's just threatening lethal.
Yeah, yeah. Well, since we're talking about quest warrior so much, why don't we bring up a quest warrior that you had also, Zalay? Let me see.
Yeah, like you were saying, quest warrior is like, it's, I think it's really cool conceptually now, but if it turns out to be good, it'll get really old. I think Noxious was saying it.
I think it's potentially a good deck. Like there's nothing about it that makes me think it's gonna get bad. I just wonder, like, in a world of Lakari sacrifices with 3/2 imps, like that keep coming out on the board two at a time, and you're just jamming at 33% every time. It's just
the warrior quest lines up horribly against the warlock quest. If that's the world we're living in. So Fireplume's Heart is the quest. You would keep that off the mulligan against slower decks, and you could mulligan against an aggressive deck because you don't need to turn. You don't need Sulfurous to be an aggro deck. You just need to have enough taunts and fiery war axes and stuff to survive, right? And then you just win. But against the slower deck, it's like absolutely vital to having a functional deck that does anything. Maybe you get the quest off fast enough to keep Jade decks in check. Even who knows?
Yeah, and
the dream.
Just gonna talk about this a little bit more. There's one first mate. Shield slams, yeah. Cornered Sentries, executes Fiery War Axe, slams, Acolyte of Pain, Ravaging Ghoul, Shield Block, Tar Creepers, Bloodhoof Brave, Singent, is there a Singent in here? Alley Armorsmith, Second Rate Bruiser, Tar Lord, and Primordial Drake. So
that was one of my favorite cards, Primordial Drake. It's not my top five, I don't think, but it was close. Yeah. Final eight or whatever.
Yeah.
That's a nice one.
How can Chill Maw be a thing? And this guy's like, oh yeah, dude, I'm just battle crying removal, no problem. With a bigger health pool, count me in. Like, I just
so many like control dragon decks that I wanted to build would have loved this card, but now the dragons are rotated out, and it's just this.
Well, I mean, this card is.
But
very...
Curator's the thing with that. Curator almost made the cut in this deck, but it kind of came out at the last second. It might find its way back in. Curator curving into Primordial Drake, that's pretty hot, right? Like, that's something you're gonna have to watch out in the new metagame.
Yeah,
I like it.
I mean, functionally, it's kind of similar to what Baron was for a long
time. Yeah, it's like a Baron Genin, except for that, you know, it's got stats that you want. 4/8 taunt instead of 7/5 kill myself, right?
But
if I could just talk about a couple of the synergies in the deck really quickly.
Go for it.
So the new 2-mana 2/6 that spawns 3/1/1s for them, it's a lot like Dirty Rat in that you can't just jam it on 2 most of the time, because if you play that and then they play a, you know, a Flame Tongue Totem and eat your 2/6, you're like really embarrassed about yourself and what have you been doing with your life. But it has some cool synergies. Like, let's say I play Acolyte of Pain on 3. My opponent doesn't kill it. Now I play the Cornered Sentry and trade my Acolyte into one of those 1/1s. Draw a card, still there. That's sick value. Or the more obvious synergy, you just play Cornered Sentry and something like Ravaging Ghoul or Brawl. But I don't think Brawl's in the deck with this current version. But it's something I thought about having in the deck. And then also, the Nezalt's First Mate is just like a third early game weapon for when you don't have Fiery War Axe. Because one of the big vulnerabilities of a deck like this, the deck's just trying to play a taunt minion every turn kind of thing, right? Mm-hmm. And so your opponent's going to generally be ahead on board and control the attacks, and they're going to try and set it up in such a way that they attack into your taunt minion and they have a one health guy behind, and then they're just crushing you, right? So Nezalt's First Mate fixes that problem. It makes it so they have to trade in such a way that they have a two health guy behind, or else you can actually clean it up. So it just makes it harder for them to exploit how predictable and vulnerable your taunts are to value trades.
Yeah, it's also not too bad with Cornered Sentry on the curve too. Like if you open up with the Zoss First Mate, lets you clean up the 1/1s afterwards.
Yeah,
I really like the concept. I noticed you, like, I was actually thinking of this type of warrior deck, and like with the Direhorn guy and maybe Nezoth, since you could technically go the Infested Tauren route and jam a ton of death rattle taunts to come back at the end for a final push, and then you start jamming Sulfurous powers in their face.
My issue with Nezoth is that it's an alternate win condition. I feel like the quest is enough of a win. Probably,
okay.
I would get my intuition is that the quest is enough of a win condition, and I don't want to constrain my. I don't want to make my deck worse to try and put in a second win condition. I think one is enough.
See, this is So in my head, when I was building this deck too, this is what I was talking about when I was mentioning that I feel like you need an additional, you know, kind of end game or damage accompanying Sylphurus, because these guys are not going to be threatening. These guys are not going to do damage alongside Sylphurus. So it's like, what kind of tempo are you going to have on the board when your opponent's, you know, your opponent could just
compete. I'm just trying to survive. I'm just trying to live. I'm just trying to play taunts, not die, get the quest off, and then eventually the hero power will make him quit.
Because as they starve for cards, it's kind of like the same thing as control. Instead of winning with fatigue, though, you're winning with 8 damage a turn. And I'll say that, like, about the new control decks they're pushing. Like, for all we laugh about Jade Druid, it's still very slow. It can be considered a control deck in some matchups. And it just doesn't let you get the fatigue. The same way this quest is telling you, you can be a control deck too. Good toss on curve seems good. End the game before fatigue, because no one likes those games. So Blizzard, like, they're basically imposing the anti-fatigue philosophy in a way that makes us feel like we're still playing a control deck, right? Like, it definitely looks that way.
I know what you mean. Yeah, totally. Oh, another, you know, one thing here. Did you consider Direhorn Hatchling, this card? Given that it gives you
what I was talking about.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, we talked about it a bit. We just didn't like the numbers on it, just didn't seem that appealing.
Yeah.
The 6/9 is
like 5-mana 3/6 taunt is we've seen a 5-mana 3/6 taunt before in the C'Thun decks, and it just, the card was underwhelming. And the fact that it shuffles something into your deck is, I think we've seen that's generally not that big of an upside.
I would say the only thing that it is an upside from the standpoint of if you had like a set number of taunts that you wanted to include here that you feel like let you survive, you can subtract 2 from that, right? If you run 2 of these guys, because you get 2 extra cards, right? That's kind of how it works. But outside of that, is the 6/9 a 7 drop? What is it?
It's a 5 drop.
I think it's the same cost.
It's a 5 drop?
It's a 5 drop.
God. Okay. Yeah. Oh, that's right.
So I think it's kind of like the
average. The average is pretty good, right? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, the only thing about this, again, is just I feel like Sylphurus, in my head at least, it's, I think people are going to be able to play around that. So it's an additional 2 or 3 turns than people think to end a game. And that's,
well, I'm not trying to kill him with the Sylphurus. I'm just trying to make it clear that in the long run, I have inevitability. I have card advantage. You're going to run out of resources kind of thing, right? I just want the Sylphurus to kill their dudes and make them quit. I'm hoping it never goes face. And I think the idea is you have some AoE from like Primordial Drake and the weapons sort of, and Ravaging Ghoul. And hopefully that can prevent them from going wide on the board and making your rag shots ineffective.
Yeah. If this is too good, then that will be a bummer, in my opinion.
I doubt this is too good.
This is too easy. It's just too easy to build this, you know? Like, that would be really...
There's
really
a lot of different ways to build this. I really didn't know how to build this deck. There's, like there aren't brawls in this deck. Is that right? I don't know.
Yeah. I tried both, too. Yeah.
We'll probably have to... This is one of these things where, like, you first draft very quickly in the first game. You're like, yep, this doesn't make any sense. And then you swap it out. Like, having Curator in, for instance, could be amazing just to guarantee Primordial Drake on the curve. So you could technically cut one of the mid-game taunts, for instance, that you feel like you don't need. And you'll know that as soon as you play it the first time. It'll be pretty damned obvious, like, after a few games.
I mean, and a lot of the advantage of playing a few games is just that we'll get to see something about the new metagame. Because right now, we don't know that much. Like, I would guess that it's going to be an aggressive metagame, because historically it is. And
if it's an aggressive
metagame, I don't see any reason for that to change.
If it is aggressive, aggro with, you know, Pirate Warriors and Zoo decks or even Murloc decks, then yes, this deck is really good against that, for sure.
Well, but the Zoo, I think, beats this, right? If they're playing the quest, then your inevitability just doesn't function at all. What are you doing?
Okay, yeah, I guess that's a good point.
I guess your Primordial Drake is just like the game plan. Just play Primordial Drake and you win.
It might not be enough, though. You probably need one brawl in here just to fight against those type of decks, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. Let's see what else we got here. Might as well keep going with your decks here. You got a quest mage, so let's talk a little bit about mage.
This is cool, one of the more fun ones.
Yeah,
quest mage is kind of just the new freeze mage, actually, in terms of what it accomplishes. So the quest is you play, like, what is it, 6 spells that did not start in your deck. So the enablers for that,
open
and
the
then
way
you get a time walk, right? 5 mana, take an extra turn. So the enablers for that are, there's many. There's Babbling Book, Babbling Book, Primordial Glyph, Shimmering Tempest. It's kind of like a bad Babbling Book, but you just really like that effect. Mm-hmm. Mana Bind, which is their in a large, I mean, it's partly because it's enabler, and it's also like it enables Arcanologist, which is just a strong card. Mm-hmm. And then Cabalist Tome, which is maybe not good in this deck. It's like really slow, but it really like draws a lot of cards. You're going to get that quest off for sure if you find a Cabalist Tome. But the idea is you just stall the game with Frost Nova, Doomsayer, Blizzard, and some random removal spells mm-hmm. until you get this quest off from having drawn enough cards and played these things that are not in your deck. And then once you get the quest off, you have the Time Warp in your hand. You try and set it up to where you go Arcane Giant, take an extra turn. And then on the extra turn, you Alexstrasza, they go down to 15. You attack with two Arcane Giants, and that's lethal. So it's an OTK. It's sort of over two turns, but I call it an OTK.
Yeah,
right?
it's definitely an OTK deck.
Yeah. But the reality is you really don't have to OTK them. You can just, you know, if they're an aggro deck, you can just kind of like stall, play an 8-8 and figure things out.
Well, you have enough burn too, because you get 10 man. You know, the exercise with this particular deck was basically figuring out, okay, how do we abuse Time Warp, right? And Time Warp, for those of you not familiar with Time Warp, it's the text is literally add another turn. Like, you get an extra turn. And what that means, in practicality speaking, is it means that it costs 5 mana to cast Time Warp. So anything that you can cast, like, from a minion standpoint, with that 5 mana you have, lose a summoning sickness. And that means it essentially has charge. So you kind of try to figure out the best way to abuse that. And the best way to abuse that is Arcane Giant. Because now Arcane Giant is probably the most bang for your buck for the least amount of mana. And then your following turn, you get 10 mana to do whatever you want. So you can Alexstrasza, take him down to 15, kill him with the 16. And you still have 1 mana that you can do something with too. So you can either do that or you know, there's different combinations of what you can do with the 5 mana, you know, again, charge. And then you have all the burn that you normally would have too, like the 2 fireballs and the frostbolt. So there's a lot of different damage sequences you can have, but the OTK aspect is the Alexstrasza.
That's the big draw to me. Like, go ahead.
What I love about this OTK deck is that it's very functional when it's not OTKing. It can just play a normal game of Hearthstone. And the Arcane Giants and the Alexstrasza being the OTK cards, it's like, these are just fine cards you could put in a deck, you know? Yeah. Play some 8-8s, maybe heal yourself. Maybe they're cheap. It's pretty good.
Yeah, definitely is. And then you're going to be getting all these extra quests. I mean, sorry, extra spells, too. So those could be fireballs, those could be torches, those could be, you know, all kinds of damage anywhere. So even having 15 damage in a single turn purely from spells is pretty rock solid too. You can get 21 from that if you have 3 fireballs in it.
So have you considered putting in Burgly Bully in the deck? Because that was one of the cards that, for the quest's purposes, seems so easy to just get
considered
out of.
And I don't like it. Here's why.
Okay, go ahead.
The deck does not have a lot of kind of supporting minions sort of thing, right? Like, we have minions at the end to finish them off with Time Walk, the Alexstrasza, and the other thing. And then we have some early minions that are really just kind of, they happen to be bodies, but they're more because you're drawing cards and cycling through your deck. So the Burgly Bully comes at a point in the game where you probably don't have board control, and I think they can probably pretty easily trade into it and kill it off without having to play a spell and give you any coins. And it's just, your deck doesn't use the body well. You know, Freeze Mage is all about ignoring the board and making their board kind of less relevant. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't give them, minions to shoot at, which Burgly Bully kind of does. You don't make their removal good. I'm not sure you're gonna get coins, and I'm not sure that I want a 4/6 in my deck.
Yeah. So the point is basically, since they don't have anything to take care of outside of like pingable stuff, you know, in the early game or big Doomsayer, they're never going to find removal targets. So don't start making like a one-off that's going to suddenly turn a card that's dead into a life card.
I could be wrong. It's maybe the card's good in the deck, but that's my instinct. If you want to try it out, go for it.
There's so many ways to build this, too.
Yeah, it's
like,
a different
I'm
build
thinking
than this.
You could build this in a tempo fashion if you wanted, really. Like, there's nothing holding you back. It's just the Arcanologist is such a carry card for these decks. Like, across the board, the 2-mana 2/3 that draws you a secret, it's probably going to be the carry card of the expansion for mages. Like, I'm looking at mage and I just can't think of a deck to build these days. I'm just like, I'm looking at everything, and I feel like without that card, mage would just lack this power early play that lets them get card draw and also set up options for themselves. So that card being there is a blessing.
So one thing to mention though about this card draw, because there is card draw in this deck, it's just not card draw necessarily for, you know, what, like, your the cards you put in the deck. So that's why it's good that this deck doesn't have the OTK being, you know, just the main finisher. Like, I think the games will finish equally, like maybe 50% of the games will finish with that combo, and 50% will finish with just your normal type of, you know, mage burn, whatever type of play. And so I think that's going to be really, really interesting. Antonidas, any consideration for those type of builds? You know, I think that falls more in line with a bully build, but
so Antonidas is good with the Frost Nova. There's not a lot of cheap spells. There's no Ice Lance that makes Antonidas much worse.
Well, you got Mana Bind.
I guess the Primordial Glyph makes it better.
Yeah. So and Mana Bind as well, actually. Mana Bind works. Mana Bind is a no-cost spell. So.
Yeah, I mean, Antonidas is a consideration. It's like a slow card that's kind of a tech card, I would say, for certain matchups. Like, it doesn't necessarily contribute to your normal game plan, and it's a weak card against aggro. But it's very powerful against some slower decks. So it's kind of a metagame call whether you want to tech in an Antonidas to beat certain decks.
Yeah. I was considering for a while, you know, going for the Molten Giant route where you set up Ice Block, let yourself die at 1 HP, then you go Molten,
oh,
you know, Molten Reflection, and then you Time Warp.
Yeah.
But I feel like the amount of pieces you have to assemble
if they just don't pop the Ice Block?
Right,
some decks
the end of it, you die of fatigue as you just blow up.
Well, the issue, too, is that, again, it's like my point. You only have Arcane Intellect that really draws your cards.
Yeah.
So even finding the Molten Giants and let's say you just want to do the Walk of the Giants mage, like old school. And it's like, you have to find these cards. So the more cards you have to find to end games, it's this deck is actually not great for that. And it's interesting. It's definitely very, very interesting. As good as Arcanologist is, there's still no tempo play, right? Like, do you guys see a tempo mage out of this?
Out of this? Or you mean the channel?
I did build a secret mage just last night.
Did you? Yeah. Is it any good? You think it's going to be good?
I'm excited to find out.
Okay.
I'll say that much. So it lacks good. Like the Flame Waker turns where you just blow up their board. And
no, it's got some powerful stuff. Okay. But playing a zero mana secret and the 2/3 Medivh's Valet is really powerful. Sure. So I think Arcanologist is exactly the kind of card that secret mage needed to get better. But is it enough to make it better enough? Like, there's no Flamewaker, there's no Arcane Blast. Like, it loses a lot compared to it.
Yeah.
I was looking at an Elemental Mage, too. Like, because all the cards, a lot of the cards you have are, like, Elemental-based, and you could still play Element. Like, the format of 5-4, right, that discovers, that gives you a Molten Geyser. That Molten Geyser is fuel for the quest, right? So you could actually play Elementals and get enough. Like, you have the Tempest, you have the format of 5-4. All that stuff gives you quest fuel. So there's a lot of ways to approach the quest deck building. And really, I think it'll take a solid month and a half before it solidifies before we know what the quest mage is. So I like this first draft, though. It's pretty good.
And for those of you listening, this is going to be played very similar to a Freeze Mage, just because it has the Frost Novas and the Doomsayers and the Blizzards to stall out things. But on top of that, it's got Arcanologists, like we're talking about, Babbling Books, the quest, a Primordial Glyph, Shimmering Tempest, the Ice Blocks, Mana Bind, Fireball, one Polymorph, one Cabalist Tome, and Alex Straws in the double Arcanes. So I think this deck is going to be strong. That's my prediction right now. Is that
Zelay never makes strong decks? Every deck he's brought on the show has been complete garbage.
Exactly. What are you doing? Do you know what we do on this show, dude? We don't talk about
even esports.
No, that's good. That's good. That's good stuff. All right. Why don't we switch over to let's talk a little bit about Priest, since me and Noxious decided to be crazy and bring some or talk about some Priest decks. Like, who's got good
what are
Priest
we thinking?
Decks? Yeah. Like, geez, what are we doing? So. Here's mine, and let me bring up Noxious's real quick, too. His is a Highlander deck, so it's got a lot more guards than mine does.
Right, Stranglethorn Tiger. Oh, my God. I love where your head's at.
Yes. Yeah, I like that a lot, dude. So, this is beautiful.
Just a disclaimer. I know this deck might not be good, but there are extremely good discussion points, like in a lot of the cards that I included here, and probably the same, too, with yours, Noxious. But let me start with mine, since mine's on the left. Okay, this is your typical Inner Fire, Divine Spirit type of package. You know, you're going for OTK, and the way you achieve that is you got to figure out targets that are A, either stealth, or B, just not a desirable thing to kill, or not taunt, right? And when I approached that in that fashion, the things I that stuck out to me were obviously Stranglehorn Tiger, just nothing new, but Humongous Razorleaf, that is a 4/8 can't attack target for 3 mana. And that card is
humongous
good. It is stupid good, actually.
Yeah. I think it's really insane.
Yeah, yeah. So I that one's really interesting because, I mean, what is your opponent going to do? Like, is he going to actually go and attack a 4/8, knowing that you're possibly setting that up? Or is he just going to let it go, given that it's a statue? So that's kind of where I started. And then, of course, after that, I started taking a look at, things like card draw, right? Card draw is so tough for priests. So you got to include the Power Word Shields and the clerics and the purifies, even for the razor leaf. Yeah, it's crazy as it sounds. The razor leaf, and then even mass dispel, just to get rid of any big taunts that you run into, so you don't have to run any kind of shadow word spells at all. Got Dragonfire, of course, for removal, and then you've got Shadow Vision, which is, I think, the most interesting thing to talk about. Oh, Radiant Elementals too, which are essentially sorcerer apprentices for priests. That discount all spells by one. So you can get in a position where, it's better. It's a 2/3 versus 3/2. So you can get into a position where you're casting the Inner Fires and the Divine Spirits for free. You know, if you can kind of combo that if you want. But the thing, cool thing about Shadow Visions for me, and I know we reviewed it on maybe a couple episodes ago, and I was just kind of like, it's all right. You know, it really just depends on what future spells come out. I think I just had that aha moment when I was, trying to dig from, just figure out good priest decks. And I just realized freaking how amazing Shadow Visions is, because Shadow Visions is essentially tracking for priest, but it's tracking for spells, which is a very small subset. So if you can set up any kind of, OTK like things, whether it's this or it's like Mind Blast, and if you're going to go that route with hopefully some future spells in future expansions, then finding those spells is a super high probability. Like if I need to find Inner Fire or Divine Spirit, I don't have one of them and I have a Shadow Vision, there's probably a very, very good chance I'm going to find the one.
Well, you get multiple chances too, right? Yeah. If you have Shadow Visions in the deck, sometimes you can pick that one up, then play it again. So you can like cycle into Shadow Visions until you finally pick up the spell you want. And I think that's the underrated portion of playing two of those cards, is just how you're able to discover the second vision. I think that the strength of Shadow Vision is the fact that it's basically not a legendary card. If that makes any sense. Like, I feel like that's where it becomes much, much more consistent.
It's not legendary, but also it's like having a third Divine Spirit or
sure,
another chance to get one of your things. Yeah.
Consistency, redundancy, these kinds of things. Yeah. It's one of the most interesting build-around cards I've ever seen, I'd say. Mm-hmm. Shadow Visions is.
Yeah, so you could be in a position where you only have one piece of it. Let's just say you have just the Inner Fire. You could actually just have Shadow Visions instead and try to find the Divine Spirits. You know, it functions that way. So, this kind of combo deck has always been too slow to be good, and it still could be. You know, I added Tar Creepers, I added Doomsayers to try to lengthen it out. But I think the combo happens sooner with this deck than it has in the past. And, we'll see like what that race looks like. In general, though, I think it's just, I wanted to bring it up just because I felt like it was a great point of discussion.
And on the topic of those decks, I feel like the one card you omitted to put in the deck is Shambler. I feel like this deck just performs way, like if the 3-mana 4/8 comes out, it doesn't attack. They ignore it. It's so terrible. Like it is such a bad card. They can't justify jamming 4 minions into it until Shambler shows up. Then suddenly their life becomes a bit more miserable. Is the whole Eerie Statue shenanigan?
I had it in here. It's just the hard part was really thinking about A, staying alive, and B, and you could replace like Priest of the Feast, for instance,
Mass Dispel,
and then secondly it was like I have to draw cards. Priest has such a terrible engine for drawing cards that it takes a lot of investment to get 8 to 9 cards, and that's kind of what I'm looking at right now. And that was the challenge was figuring out how I can dig. And that could be tweaked. If Shadow Vision really is that good, then maybe you can remove like some of these card drawing mechanics and then add a Shambler or add, just more minions.
So one last thing. I feel like, Leroy is bad. She's not bad. Let me rephrase that. Oh, Lyra. If she's good, yeah. Like Lyra, the new the Sun Shard is the priest legendary for 5 mana. It's a 3/5 that lets you get a random priest spell whenever you play a spell. Mm-hmm. That card is probably not amazing, but if it is good, I think it's going to be completely bonkers. And
it's
you know, when you're running 2 Radiant Elementals and 2 Shadow Visions, I'm just thinking, why not just slap Lyra in there for the one-off time where you just get like a disgusting outcome and you just get the cycle Shadow Vision into Shadow Vision into Shadow Vision, and just fill up your hand with options. So it's like, I want the card to be good.
It's,
so I'm going to try to make it work, but
it's scary. Yeah. It's like, this is really great. And like, I applaud, you know, the dev team for making these, or the design team for making these cards. But at the same time, I know they're probably super scared to print good spells now. Like, you know, with Lyra, with, especially direct damage spells. Like, I think Mind Cheap Blast spells. Is all we're going to get, guys. Like, literally. Because if you're, you know, Lyra comes up and, you know, you're casting free spells, basically, it can be scary, you know, from that standpoint.
Yeah. All time to make double Burly Bully Lyra Priest go to town. That being said,
heck yeah.
Know, on the other side of the deck building, I made a Highlander Priest. This is a first draft. It's awful. It's god awful.
I think all of our decks are god awful.
Right. All the decks are god awful. Exactly. That's great. You know, I think we're all gonna have a miserable time tomorrow on the ladder.
Except Pirate Warrior. So, that's a good one. That's a good deck.
Correct. Correct. Yeah, that's true. So the idea here was just recreate a Reno deck without Reno. I mean, we do still have access to Kazakus. We still have access to Raza the Chained. And we have the ability, if we want to use, which I didn't put in the deck, but you have the ability to use Greater Healing Potion in the deck. If you really want it, if the metagame becomes too aggressive and you want Greater Healing Potion, jam it in there. So the deck runs something like 11 Death Rattles, I think. And what struck me was the fact that N'Zoth just worked okay with the way in which the deck panned out. It's like you still bring back Infested Tauren as a taunt. You don't want to die. They still keep Dragonfire Potion and dragons are gone. So that's probably going to be... It's probably going to operate similarly to a Light Bomb in many matchups, I think. So that board clear just got a ton better across the board. My biggest worry for the archetype is, like, how do you draw enough cards to get to where you want to go? Like, every single time I build a priest deck, I just go back to it and it makes me feel so uneasy that to look at the lack of card draw in that class, it's
that's my point. That was my point, right?
Such a problem. It's such a problem.
My issue actually more with priest and even especially the Highlander one, and even Death Rattle, whatever, is that what is the end game for priest? Like, I don't even know how to
reset your health. Pass. What?
I don't even. I mean, I get all these cards. Like, I'm gonna get all these cards from my opponent's, you know, deck, and I've got crazy card power and value. But what the hell do I even do with it? Unless I get my opponent's end game, I don't really have an end game because N'Zoth just. He brings me back 1/1s and
well, at least the Trailblazer helps it a little bit, right? Like, Kazakus is your end game, so you have Kazakus and N'Zoth as two pieces of the end game. At least is crazy, disgusting value. If you jam Shadow Visions in the deck, that's another pack potentially that you can discover. if you wanted, which is actually not something to like, it's nothing to scoff at if you think about it that way.
Yeah, it's
like
cool.
There's so many little things. I didn't put Shadow Visions in the build because I'm going to experiment with it tomorrow, but I'm thinking, you know, you can tech these weird archetypes to be a lot slower. And I think you might just be better off to be, you know, building a Death Rattle Priest without the Highlander portion completely, you know, cut out Kazakus, cut out the memory, and just play Shadow Visions with Elise. I think that's just fine. It's a slower, like a more consistent deck because it always curves with double Crystalline Oracle, double Shifting Shade. Mm-hmm.
Shadow Visions for Elise, huh? I hadn't... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a lot of cards. Jesus.
I hadn't heard that yet. That's actually really powerful.
It is pretty cool.
I don't think Shadow Visions belongs in this Kazakus Priest you have built here because, like, 2 mana is a high price to pay for redundancy, and the redundancy is like, what are you doing with it in this deck? I don't know. You're just,
right.
3 mana Powered Shield sucks. 4 mana Shattered Pain sucks. you need to have some kind of sweet combo going on to justify paying an extra 2 mana. You don't really have that in this deck, right? This is just a pile of stuff. But so I like the way you built it in that you don't have Shadow Visions there. But now that you've said Shadow Visions, Elise, you got me thinking. That's
you could think
sweet.
Of it as a +5 draw, right? I mean, it could be draw 5 cards, like Shadow Vision in the end. And that,
if you play 2 Shadow Visions again, you can keep cycling them, you know, until you find your pack.
That's pretty cool. That definitely is cool. I, you know, One thing, again, that stands out that I mentioned even months ago, and it's even worse now because some of our options are gone with the expansions that got retired, is we just don't have enough greedy cards. Like, if I have all this card power, I just want cards that are extremely greedy for 9 mana, 10 mana that I can play in a priest like this and, you know, have some type of end game where I can, you know, outvalue a
I think Free from Ember is that. Like, I've come to terms with the fact that... Really? No. Don't call that card bad. I think that card is actually really, really solid.
Really?
Free from Ember for a late game card, I think, is the best priest is going to get. Like, that card, it's 8 and plus you discover, so the range is pretty big, but you get to be slightly flexible about it. And there are some pretty big minions you can get. Some of them are going to fit your archetype. Some of them are going to be defensive. Some of them are going to be Tarantis. No, I'm kidding. You can't discover that. But you can find Sogoth occasionally. You know, it's just... right. You can find some flexible eight drops. And, I mean, Medivh is too slow for Priest, I think. I mean, it's just...
Yeah, it's... So, Free for Amber, you're absolutely right. Free for Amber in terms of, you know, finding an eight drop, which has always been a sweet spot for Forbidden, is good. But... it just doesn't exist. Like, what I'm saying is, like, there's not even an eight drop that's greedy for me that exists in the game for me to want to get, you know. Unless that includes, does that include class cards too?
I wish, but it doesn't.
Oh, yeah,
otherwise
it doesn't include class cards.
Lord, so like, and memories.
Yeah,
and
there's nothing that I even want, you know. So it's that's what I mean. It's like I wish there were more Ysera's. You know, I wish even Arsleaf Rafam still existed, or, you know, just some of those cards that were crazy greedy. They're gone too. So there's literally nothing to choose from at the top or at the, you know, the high end.
So do we start playing double Forbidden Shaping, double Free from Amber in every priest? And this is our meta game?
I guess.
No.
So it's like, if you want to die on turn three.
Not at all.
Okay. So I also brought a, let's see. Okay. Hemet Druid. So, I was going through the Hemet exercise, and
oh, whew, baby,
that is a okay.
There
so
we go.
This is meme-y. Okay, totally meme-y. But I just want to throw out some of the other decks that I've come up with. The Hunter one, I think, is maybe the more obvious one, where you just try to set up Tundra Rhino, you know, and just have, you know, you run the quest, and then you or not the quest. Sorry, you play Hemet, then you run the quest to get all the 1/1s. So like. Basically everything in your deck is a 1/1, and then you run the Tundra Rhino so that you can, you know, do some kind of crazy combo. Okay, that was like one Hemet quest that I did, but then I was like, okay, let's do a different one. Can I find a second Hemet quest or Hemet deck? And dude, it was so hard to figure out something for Hemet, or at least something that wasn't just, you know, a bit, you know, just like a slight improvement, like a Ramp Druid, you know, that has a slight improvement for improving your draws at the end. And so something that totally abuses Hemet, and this is the only thing I could come up with, which was Blood of the Ancient One deck. Ooh. Which is kind of interesting. Has to be in a druid, just given that you know, druid has ramping ability. I think one of the key things is finding Hemet. Like, you have to figure out how to draw cards to find it. So there's all these loot hoarders and novice engineers and all these things to find Hemet. Once you find Hemet, that's when it kind of gets interesting, because then you're left with Barnes, Bright-Eyed Scout, Lunar Visions, Faceless Manipulator, and the Blood of the Ancient Ones. And the whole goal is to get a two-turn combo, like a two-turn 30-30 combo kind of thing. And you have two, I think you have two attempts at it. You can do it twice. Maybe even crazy three, you know, like Faceless at 30-30 if they put a taunt up or something stupid like that. But yeah, anyways, I thought it was just kind of, again, it's like puzzle solving, trying to figure out some way to make, you know, an interesting deck out of Hemet. What do you guys think about this deck? And did you guys?
I like the idea anything? Because it's very clear what you're trying to do. Like, if you toy around with the idea of Hemet, where you cut out, so you play a bunch of cheap card draw, which he has removed once you don't need it anymore. Mm-hmm. Then you Barnes out, like, whatever it is you Barnes out, if there's a Blood of the Ancient One in there, and then you can Faceless that. Bright-Eyed Scout is surprisingly good in this spot. Like, if you can pick up one of your Bloods. My big issue is, like, what happens when your Blood is in your hand and then you lose? Like, do you just lose? When Blood of the Ancient One is in your
hand. I think when you're playing this deck, you're okay with just losing some percent of the time.
Okay, right? Sure.
You're not looking to win 65%. You're looking for nice 35%.
And before the next tournament is nothing but fucking Blood of the Ancient One, Mammoth Druids.
I think you just accept it, you know?
All right.
This is like your shards. You know, when you get your shards, you know, in your hand, you're just fucked. You know, it's like, oh, you know.
It's fine. This is one of those dream decks where, like, you play for the dream, where things come together.
Okay, yeah, I like yeah. it. All
but
right,
there's
good.
There's more than I would say. There's more dream scenarios though than you know what it seems. You know, because again, you have two.
Can you point out some cool ones to me?
No, I'm just saying, like, you know, you can obviously Barnes just hitting blood is great.
That's pretty nice.
If you lunar vision and get say faceless and blood, you can actually have the discount enough on both of them to be able to pull it off.
Oh, that's sick.
Yeah. When you hem it, you're down to
Bright Eye Scout.
More
yeah, and Bright Eye Scout hits one. And the cool thing is that none of these things are legendary, except for Hemet and Barnes. But the other the others are doubles. So you get two chances at it, which is, you know, kind of, it's an interesting aspect to it. So
I'd like two chances at Hemet.
Oh, God, I don't. I don't. So, I mean, this is what I could come up with. Could you guys think of anything for Hemet? It's so hard, man, to come up with something to abuse it.
I think the key is that you don't want to abuse it because it is a legendary and a six mana card. I think I think from a competitive standpoint, the way to look at Hemet is you find decks where this is a good six mana card to just jam in there. It's kind of like Barnes, how you don't really want to build your whole deck around Barnes. You really also don't want to build your whole deck around Hemet from a competitive standpoint. Instead, you want to find a deck where Hemet happens to be good because, you know, you don't want to draw cheap stuff in the late game and you can afford to run a 6-mana 6-6. It has a big downside in that it's a 6-mana 6-6 and aggro will kill you if you play a bunch of cards like that. Like, that's slow. It's like a Draconid Crusher that's never even a 9-9, so it's just much worse on tempo. But if you can find a deck that can afford that kind of card slot and it just really does well with drawing its 4-plus mana cards, and a deck that's okay with losing every single game in fatigue because Hemet does that to you, you never ever make it to fatigue, then, you know, Hemet can be a good one-up in some decks.
You've not met my friend Jade Idol, I hear. You just play Hemet into Jade Idol, then you replenish. You're guaranteed to find nothing but Jade Idol and Jade Generators for the rest of the game.
That's pretty cool.
That's pretty disgusting is what it is.
So, I don't know if you need that, though. I feel like...
Yeah.
I think the Jade deck's got enough end game without the Hemet.
Yeah.
And the Hemet makes it more vulnerable to aggro, which is the weakness of Jade,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. When all I have to do is add two creepers to what I already have, oh, you know, it's super easy. Super easy deck to continue having a lot of success with.
But maybe there's some aggressive mid-rangey deck where you just play your Hemet and then you draw your 4-plus mana cards for the rest of the game and just kill them over the next 5 turns or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why aren't you playing the quest in this deck?
In this deck? I thought about the quest.
Like blood, have you come up with like a Blood of the Ancient One Druid deck where you just jam that stuff?
I tried that. I tried that. It's just, it took too many more parts to pull it off. And, you know, Hemet is a legendary. If you could run two Hemets, I think this deck could potentially be a little bit easier. But the fact that there's only one in any of the decks, you have to, you know, search for it. And that's the hardest part when there's only one of a card.
Yeah. Let's see what the quest for Druid does. I'm really excited to try that card out because I feel like the guy that lets you randomly find a 5-attack or more, the 3-mana 5/1 that can adapt itself if you have a 5-attack or more, like those on their own, I feel just complete the quest for you. Like, you might not need to push too crazily for that quest completion and eventually just jam ridiculous big stuff. That's something I can't wait to try.
Okay, well, why don't we move on to Warlock? And we actually have two Warlocks that are quest Warlocks, achieving them in a different way. So we'll have Zalay talk about the zoo one first, which he has. It's a discard zoo.
Yeah, so discard zoo. This might be my pick for strongest day one deck. You know, you might be beating Pyro Warrior with this deck and everything else. You mulligan the quest against aggressive decks. Again, it's kind of like, I think all the quests, it's like the quests are kind of anti-slower deck cards, and they're really bad against aggro. But it's zoo. It's built around a discard theme. Bunch of good stuff in there. I don't know what to say.
The Ravazor, there's a Ravazor run dimension. It's a card.
Yeah, Ravazor.
Actually,
yeah, it's just efficient, right? Yeah. If you're getting a 2-mana 2/2 with whatever it's called, adapt, then that's very efficient, and a lot of times that's going to work in zoo. It might be bad in a Pirate Warrior metagame where they're keeping your board clear the entire time.
I'm surprised,
but for the most part, zoo can get that card off, right?
I'm surprised you left out the 4-mana 4/4 that eats up an egg.
Well, then you have to play the egg.
And then
there aren't that many eggs, and there's like we have, you only want so many cards that cost four mana in the deck. The main thing is, I think there's kind of two different ways to build Zoo, and one is discard and one is egg.
I see.
Gotcha. The discard theme doesn't work well with the egg theme, because the egg theme, you're trying to assemble combos, and the discard theme, you're just kind of dumping your hand onto the table, and you might be discarding key combo pieces and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So the discard theme doesn't play well with the egg combo theme. And I would guess that the discard theme is stronger, but I'm not really sure. You know, both, it all needs testing. It's new stuff.
Right. It's one of those things where I think the egg version will have, like, will be faster, right? Will pressure faster, but then doesn't, you know, have that awesome end game, like, that this will have. So
the guaranteed end game, basically.
Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic. Like, even just figuring out which of these is better is a really cool thing, and will take, you know, a lot of data to figure out. And even refine it too.
I think Clutch Mother Zavas and Silverware Golem give you some really nice broken potential, which is an important thing in the deck. And then, of course, the quest does a lot of inevitability. So, I don't know. I do think this, I would guess that this is probably the stronger of the two ways to build Zoo. Like, the egg thing, the new egg costs one more than the old egg, and even though it's bigger, it's still a net loss because you lose flexibility.
Here's an interesting thought. If you have to build the egg deck, would it become, could you make it a mid-range lock, is my question. Does it ever, like, do you ever reach a point where you can play this card in mid-range? Or do you need your cards so badly that you can't afford it? Because if you play double Silverware and the outlet of the Clutch Mother, then those kind of, you know, they work everywhere. The big question is, like, can you slow down the deck and still play for the quest? You know, without going full meme with Deathwing, which is like a single-handed deck, like, quest completion. Yeah, sure. But the point is, like, can you mid-range this quest?
So the way I see it, when I'm building a Zoo Warlock, I feel like Malkazar's Imp, Soulfire, Doomguard, Silverware Golem, Clutch Mother Zavas, all that stuff seems like too powerful to not play.
Right.
And I think once I'm playing all these discard things, it really pushes me towards going in more of a, I'm going to call it full discard, even though it's not running everything, like I have here on screen. And, like, how many 4-drops do you really want in this deck? I feel like 3 to 4 is about the right amount. So you're going to play, you're going to cut the Defender of Argus or something? Like, I'm just not that sold on the power level of the whole egg thing. There's like two cards, right? There's a Pterodactyl for 4 mana, and there's an egg for 3 mana. There's no Haunted Creeper anymore. So that's like a pseudo egg that we don't have access to anymore.
Like, I feel like
it's not the same.
Like, I'm getting the weird, personally, I think the Lucari Sacrifice quest is the most seemingly powerful quest with the least actual, like, viability. And, like, the discrepancy between what we think and what it'll come out as, I think it's pretty wide.
I think a lot of quests were very slow.
Yeah, it's very slow. And it's very susceptible to board clears, too. So, like, the snowball.
I'm not sure about that.
No,
you don't think so?
Oh, three,
if you, if,
it's pretty...
Well, if you kill the 3/2s, they come back next turn. That's why it may
they
not
do,
be susceptible.
But, you know, it takes a little bit to start snowballing out of control is kind of what I'm trying to get at. Because, you know, maybe one removal they have, and then it'll take a couple more turns.
If it's like the 8-mana dragon, it's susceptible to that for sure, because that one develops while clearing at the same time.
Yeah,
but if you're just clearing and then passing with an empty board, the quest is still overrunning you with value and tempo and everything. That's fine.
And that's why I think
what this quest is really vulnerable to, like Nacho saying, what this quest is really vulnerable to is, you know, Pirate Warrior, them hitting you in the face. It's so bad against that. You snap mulligan against Pirate Warrior. You don't want Lucari Sacrifice.
Okay, yeah. So here's a question, especially with Zoo, because this came up before on our show. Do you play Lucari Sacrifice in turn one?
There are matchups where you keep it and play it on turn one, and then there's matchups. It's going to depend. That's the answer.
Okay. I hope we don't have like a super polarized
meta. That's what makes Hearthstone
meta.
Great. Yeah. You don't have such simple answers all the time to things. A lot of times it depends on what's going on.
Yeah, but like,
you have
what
people
if
that say, like, no matter what, play it first. I mean, I want to just achieve it as fast as I can. Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Wrong.
That guy's wrong.
I know. That's what I think,
but
too.
Here's my big worry is, like, the metagame has both Taunt Warrior and Pirate Warrior, and your mulligan phase looks like, well, I guess we're flipping a coin. What do we do with this quest?
Remember the old Zoo handlock thing where you look at how many cards they mulligan?
So yeah.
Like, all right, if they kept a lot of cards, they're probably Zoo. If they mulligan everything, they're probably handlock. And then you got the handlock with the nut draw and you mulligan wrong, and you're like, oh no.
Yeah, we're screwed now.
Exactly. Oh, so just to talk about a few more of the cards. It's a lot of cards that we've seen, like Possessed Villager and Michael's Imp and Dark Shark. librarian for the discards, as well as the new Lakari Fellhound, the big taunt that, you know, a lot of people love and been talking about. In Knife Jugglers, Direwolf Alpha, some old school zoo cards, Soulfires, double Soulfire, the two Doom Guards, of course, and Ravasaur Runt, which is that adapt card.
Yeah, you got to think the Lakari Fellhound putting a Silver Golem into play is just going to beat the heck out of Pirate Warrior.
Yeah, I think
that's kind of why this is my pick for best deck on day one.
I think Lakari Fellhound with just two creepers in any deck just beats the shit out of Pirate Warrior.
Yeah,
like that's for sure. Those four cards literally destroy Pirate Warrior. So
Lakari Fellhound is like the glue that makes this deck just get there. You know, yep. I'm talking about the quest, how it just, oh, well, the quest is hard to pull off because la, 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 and I'm just being a Debbie Downer at this point. But the fact that you get a format 3/8, it's not a defensive Arceus that says, please have a board state so I can do something defensive. It's like, no, here's this big wall, and if you have a Clutch Mother in your hand, she stays there. And then we just keep going for the discard, and you have the time to get that quest completed into turn five.
The Clutch Mother is such an enabler. Like, don't even look at what the +2/+2 aspect of it is. It's more that it stays in your hand, and you can discard something every time you have a discard hand, and that's like so good in terms of at least finishing the quest. Eventually, you will play some 8/8 or 10/10, which is really, really nice, but. The enabling aspect of it, I think, is the key part to this card, and it's really, really good. Okay, so we talked about Zoo. Let's talk about a different way of completing this quest, which is a deck that I put together. And get ready. Here he comes.
Hit us up.
Okay, so the premise of completing the quest for this one is the opposite. So you don't play a bunch of discard cards or cards that discard. You play one. And it's Deathwing. And, you know, because it's potentially the easiest way to enable it, you know, in terms of, you know, fitting things into your deck. It's the most efficient way. It's like a one card way to complete the quest. So 28 cards to do whatever you want with, basically. And I chose the Handlock route just as, you know, just something to discuss. And mainly I chose it for two reasons. Just to really point out how lacking of heal we have. Like, literally, you know, before we would have vendors, and you know, you could of course Earth and Ring Farseer, of course Reno and things like that. Now vendor's gone, so you're like, what else do we have, you know, like what else can we do? And so that's why I have like apothecaries in here. Also, I wanted to show that Blood Bloom, especially in combination with Violet Illusionist, is actually crazy cool in terms of what you can do with that. Because you can cast all, you know, you can basically cast any of the giant spells that you want. And I used to have Doom in here, and I had Double Twisting Nether for a while and things like that. But, you know, I took those out just for the sake of trying to make something that can survive a bit better against, you know, more aggressive type of decks. But that combination is just something that was like eye opening. I was like, wow, I mean, I can do super cool things with that. And I can even have, just, you know, potentially really incredible turns from the Deve and things like that. So
I will just to say here, I think your deck would be disgusting and wild. Like, it might just be the most fun stuff ever.
Yeah, that's
like just true. The fact that we have all these
Reno Healbot.
Yeah, you can actually heal yourself into like a Curator, into Deathwing, into GG. You know, like that's
Implosion for two mana.
Yeah. Oh my god.
Oh my god. Yeah. That's crazy. Yeah, that's definitely crazy. Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And I mean, it's going to be hard to stay alive again because you can't heal. And some combinations you can have is if you have like Zoo just filling the board, Cold Apothecary, and then wiping the board with Blood Bloom and something else. But that's not going to be consistent at all. So you're still going to rely on putting big taunts up like the Razor Leaf, you know, Humongous Razor Leaf mixed with Shamblers or Defender of Arguses and you know, cards like that, right, to slow things down. In the end, I think you'll be damaged a bit too much that you can, you know, you'll be able to live long enough just for the whole Deathwing into the finish. But, you know, this is a different way of approaching it. You can just Deathwing and have more of a mid-range deck too. Like, you could have taken that approach too, but this is just more of an extreme
Yeah, I like so you have like double Earthen Ring Farseer for healing, double Cult Apothecary, one Siphon Soul. I'd kick it up to two, especially with Bloodbloom being like a very good combination with it. Sure, you're paying six, but you're getting three back.
Yeah.
So it's like self-damage for three and then kill something. I think the big issue with Bloodbloom is it's essentially forcing you to kill multiple things with whatever action you're about to take since you're spending two cards on the move. Or at least develop onto the board, which is why like when I look at the card, I'm thinking there are disgusting things you can do with Bloodbloom, but you're going to have to start running like the AoE you're not comfortable with, right? Like Hellfire no longer feels good with Reno gone. Like that's a card, Hellfire Potion. I'm just super wary of including this in my decks. Not because I don't want to. They're fantastic board clears, but I take so much damage in the process that you almost have to at least two for two, and then possibly, you know, three to four for two, depending on the value gain. I wonder how good Bloodbloom could be in a slightly faster list, with like the feeding time, you know, just to get the tempo early on turn two, or it's like a bad implosion, granted, or even Karakazam. I don't know.
Yeah, I didn't really think about it in terms of a fast deck. That's interesting.
Bloodbloom's a very dangerous card. It's fast mana, but they put it in a class where it's really hard to exploit. When you're getting fast mana, what you want to do is something proactive. You want to be putting dudes in play. So like Bloodbloom Karakazam comes to mind, for instance, right? Bloodbloom Implosion, because that's an actual powerful card. Because the powerful Warlock spells now, the expensive ones, are like Twisting Nether and Siphon Soul. Discounting those is not as strong as discounting something proactive because you can't get ahead on board and kill your opponent with your cheated mana. Right. Instead, you're just, I don't know, catching up or whatever. Right. And also, the life loss is just so relevant because, like you were saying, Chan Man, there's not a lot of healing going around. So paying eight life to Twisting Nether is... you might just die anyways, you know?
No, that's true. That's definitely not the card you want to be running Bloodbloom on, especially if you don't have Violet Illusionist on it. But it's interesting, though. I mean, at least the Deathwing finishing the quest, too, I think is an interesting way to
That's
do
sweet.
It. Yeah. I think that's a really cool interaction. So efficient that it's not this deck for sure, but I could see...
Do we know that that works, by the way? I'm just curious. Like,
yeah, it does. It's a discard. It's discard
your
hand
afterwards.
Yeah, it's discard your hand. Yeah. So just having six cards to discard, and you get a 12-12 on the board.
Oh, well, no, here's the trick. You play Dinomancer, and it's your only other minion, and you discard the second copy of... Like, you play three minions, Deathwing and two Dinomancers. You jam a Dinomancer on the board, and then you discard the other Dinomancer with Deathwing after you kill the first one, and then you just keep cycling them infinitely.
Wait, what's Dinomancer? Am I...
Cruel Dinomancer, Death Rattle summon a random minion you discarded this game.
Oh,
and since
you only discarded
Dinomancers, they cycle into each other infinitely. That could be a big fat meme.
Got you. No, that's funny. Let's go. It's a loop. Yeah, it's creative. Definitely creative. But I foresee, I'm just going to make a guess right now, I foresee Deathwing being the option of choice. I don't know what deck it is, but being the option of choice to like finish the Kari sacrifice. That's just my...
Because of efficiency.
Efficiency. And it's, I mean, A is just simple. And then, the efficiency, I think, is so good.
Okay, wait. Mm-hmm. Is there a card that lets you fill up, like, refill your hand? Like, assume you're playing a Zoo deck, right? And you're just like, I have this Deathwing that I need to discard a bunch of cards
Doom.
For. Or, like, a mid-range deck. That would have to be Doom, right? So you have to go Doom into Deathwing?
Yeah. If you were doing a mid-range, or you're doing a deck that actually spends cards at a very fast pace or doesn't have cantrips in and things like that, you'd have to do that.
Yeah.
But it's fun. This is the kind of thing that's just super fun to kind of go through and just try to figure out. But okay, well, I think that's it for the decks that we have. Why don't we talk about our top five cards, just kind of round thing, just ending the pre-Journey to N'Goro, pre-release and predictions and everything. All right, I'm going to bring up this graphic that we have.
The good stuff.
Yeah, so here we go. And our lists are... Actually, me and Noxious have a couple that are similar, but Zalei has a completely different list. And this is going to be very, very interesting.
My list is two or less. When I was like...
two or less is so crazy.
I had a lot of options of cards that I liked, and they were kind of interesting, kind of powerful, whatever. And then I was like, all right, let's just get rid of everything expensive because who cares about that?
You're such a pro player. That's what pretty much every pro player does. Okay, why don't you talk about yours first?
All right, mine first. So Galaka Crawler, 2-mana, 2/3 beast, destroy a pirate, gain +1/+1. Not the most elegant card, not the most fun, necessary. I think it is a really fun card because everybody likes crushing a pirate warrior's dreams, right? Yeah. F those guys. Let's get them.
Yeah. Oh my god.
Two mana, kill your guy. Here's a spider tank that doesn't overload me and assassinated your minion. I like it. That's fun.
Oh, we're talking about Vile Spine Slayer.
Yeah. No, two mana. No, two mana. No, two mana. It's even better.
Yeah, two mana.
Yeah, so, you know, this card will not prevent Pirate Warrior from being a good deck. Pirate Warrior will either be a good deck or not be a good deck, irrelevant to this card. All this card can do is make it so that if Pirate Warrior is a very good, very popular deck, it makes it slightly less dominant kind of thing, because that's just what tech cards do. You know, people don't jam Acidic Swamp Ooze in all of their decks, and in the same way, you're not going to run Galaka Crawler in all your decks unless somehow 40% of the meta is Pirate Warrior or something silly like that. So, yeah.
It's pretty disgusting what it does if you play against.
I'm really glad to have a tool to help keep Pirate Warrior in check. You know, that makes me.
Let's just count the things that they added. This and the 3/3 weapon destruction give health and all.
But it was overdue, taunts. Man. That weapon destruction was overdue. Pirate
Warrior. I don't think that card's a big deal. I think that's a worse version of Acidic Swamp Boost.
I think
for the
so
most
too.
Part.
But it's just another card that they made that.
If they had made it a 3/4, you know. Then we're talking.
Oh, gosh.
Now we're talking.
Now that would be oppressive, the weapons. Oh my god, people would be upset.
Yep.
Yeah, so Galaka Crawler. It's
okay.
It's nice to have something against those pirates. I wish we had this one set sooner. You know?
Yeah.
This really should have come out when Small Time Buccaneer and patches came out.
Or, you know, in that a patch makes, in yeah, between. That makes a lot of sense. How about that? Like a trickle release of, hey, here's a problem. Let's fix it. With like one card. A month after the problems start cropping up.
And then the next card I'll talk about, Firefly, one mana, 1/2 elemental battlecry, add a 1/2 elemental to your hand. A very innocent looking card, I would say. I don't think anyone sees this and gets terrified. Mm-hmm. But I wonder if we're just going to see a lot of this card in the future.
yes.
One card I keep comparing it to is Echoing Ooze. It's like an Echoing Ooze can be played over multiple turns. It's much more flexible than an Echoing Ooze. You can play it on turn one, and then whenever you have a hole in your curve, or on turn one, and whenever you need to set up for an elemental, right? There's that whole elemental synergy thing as well. Even without the elemental aspect of this card, even if it were like a non-elemental minion, I think it might be playable. But with the elemental, I think it's a cool card. And I also think it's, in a way, maybe even a tool against Pirate Warrior, because the 1/2 body is pretty annoying for them. It eats their Nazoth First Mate. It eats their patches. Mm-hmm. It survives a hit from their Rusty Hook from First Mate. It doesn't die efficiently to a Fiery War Axe attack. It's only 2 health instead of 3, that kind of thing. Just all of the Pirate Warrior stuff doesn't quite line up that efficiently against the Firefly. So this annoying little guy could get some good work done. I also like it as a Shaman card because just bodies are strong for Flame Tongue Totem. And speaking of Shaman cards and Flame Tongue Totem, Primal Fin Totem.
Yes.
2 mana, 0/3 totem. At the end of your turn, summon a 1/1 Murloc. I have no idea how good the Murloc stuff's going to be, but I like this card even outside of the Murloc stuff. When I see it, I first compare it to Manatide. A lot of people see Morose, but Morose, A, it costs 3 mana instead of 2, which is a big deal, and B, 1 health instead of 3 is a big deal, right? So when there's a Morose, you play Ravaging Ghoul and it kills everything. When there's a Primal Fin Totem, you play Ravaging Ghoul, it does not fix the problem. Same thing with Maelstrom Portal, it does not fix the Primal Fin Totem problem. So the extra bodies from Primal Fin Totem are very dangerous with Flame Tongue. So, and these kind of 0/3 totems just play well in Shaman because Shaman has the tools to protect it. Mm-hmm. If you try and flood the board against the Shaman to make it so that you can just value trade their Primal Fin Totem, you run the risk of cards like Maelstrom Portal and Lightning Storm just destroying you. And if you don't flood the board, if you have like a relatively even board, then they can make swing turns with cards like Jade Claws or Jade Lightning or Flame Tongue or whatever. So it's a difficult to answer threat. It can run away with a game if you don't answer it quickly, and it's 4 health for only 2 mana. You know, and that's a really important stat when you're looking at a minion, the health to mana ratio, because a lot of Hearthstone is about clearing the opponent's board. And, you know, it's hard to clear. It's hard to deal 4 damage on turn 2. That's a lot of stuff.
It's got infinite value, too. So it's well beyond that. Another, I would say, indirect benefit of it whenever I was trying to build with it, too, is that I felt like playing things from below is okay also in like a Murloc.
Yeah, it's like
if you can.
It's your replacement for Totem Gold. It's probably not as good, but it seems like a really strong card to me. It could be kind of a sleeper broken. That's kind of what I was looking for. Like, not all these cards are that sleeper-ish, the ones that I picked, but I was looking for cards that might be seeing a lot of play.
Right. Gotcha. No, that's cool. That's a good one. And then, let's see. You've got Primordial Glyph.
Yep.
Yep. I think we talked about that some, but more comments on
it? I think the card's super strong. You probably run two of it in every mage deck. Until I've played with it and see otherwise, I assume I just want two of those in every mage deck. You know, you get to discover a spell, so your opponent doesn't know what the heck to play around, and you have this powerful option, and it costs two less, so it's like completely impossible to play around. And it's just, you get the flexibility of Discover without any loss of tempo. Usually Discover cards, you're paying extra mana somewhere. This costs two and discounts by two. You could actually gain tempo if you play this with a Sorcerer's Apprentice in play. You know, you could be paying one and discounting by two. And then you discount again if you play it while the Sorcerer's Apprentice
is still
in play. You
could play a four-cost spell, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For zero mana. Or one mana, sorry. It's like ridiculous, yeah.
It's just really good on its own. It's really hard to play around. Mage spells are good. And you get flexibility, and they can't play around it, and you get a mana discount, so you can like cheat and set stuff up. The card seems crazy to me.
Yeah.
And then, speaking of crazy, Clutch Mother's Abyss. I mean, if it's the last card you draw in a game, it's not useful. It's a 2-mana 2/2. But that's the worst case scenario. The best case scenario is you're getting a 2-mana 6/6, draw two cards or something like that. Like, what the heck? If you discard this twice, that's what it is, right? Mm-hmm. Every time you discard this, you basically draw an extra card, and you're getting, you know, a 2-mana 4/4 or a 2-mana 6/6. It's like, what the heck? This is Edwin Van Cleef. It's a card that's maybe too broken and is kind of carrying an underpowered class to mediocrity. Or in the case of Warlock, it may be carrying a powerful class to astonishing levels of power. Who knows?
I mean, it's a necessity in that deck that we're talking about. I think
it's kind of high variance, though, right?
The discard's good. I don't think people understand how hard the discard quests will be able to achieve if you don't have a card that cantrips itself on automatically, you know, because not only is it not a penalty because it comes back, but again, you don't have to life tap just to get the penalty, you know, that helps you with a quest. It's such a cool dynamic that they've done. They've made like a penalty into a benefit back into a penalty. It's kind of like crazy, but I don't think people understand that if Clutch Zavis didn't exist, it would be this weird dynamic. It would be harder, much, much harder.
I think the quest would be bad, legit, because the fact that I'm sure, like, the games where you find Clutch Mother, the fact that she's infinitely discardable just makes that quest almost just going to complete itself.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure, like, I like the card design-wise. Like, I love the design of the card. It's one of those things where, like, I'm fascinated by the idea of having this card Outless, like Silverware and Fist of Draxxus and this. But I feel like the games where they haven't, the games where they don't, are going to be so vastly different in terms of how well the zoo does or whatever the deck is that plays this, that we might just get frustrated at it. It's like Edwin, right? Like the time you have coin, prep, Phantom Knight, Edwin. And the guy's like, well, I guess I'm dead on turn two. You know, it's one of those days.
I think that's where it's going to be interesting. I think that's where zoo's going to end up landing is, I don't know, I'm predicting that where it lands is that the quest is just kind of like something nice that you have at the end versus, you know, like there's going to be opportunities where it's like, screw the whole discard thing, dude. I want the whole silverware golem and not discarding anything, you know, just like regular discards do right now. I just want no penalties at all and from discard and just go face, you know, that sort of thing. And then I think the discard just kind of comes along with things. If you get Zavis, then all of a sudden you start considering it. If you don't get it early, then it's just like a normal, you know, Zulok type of game. You don't even try to be efficient with how you discard and things like that from the standpoint of the quest and not avoiding penalty.
Yeah. I have a question for you guys. Why is this thing a beast? Is that like a flavor or lore thing or
dinosaurs? Everything's a beast in the set. Yeah. That's really just it. Well,
like
I'm guessing it's some kind
right?
of like bug dinosaur thing. Yeah. It's some primal bug.
Yeah,
I guess bugs are just kind of beasts is the way they're looking at it.
Yeah.
It just kind of threw me off. I was like, wait a minute, this Warlock class card is a beast? What game am I playing right now?
I know, right? Yeah. Everything. Well, one thing's good is that Curator all of a sudden got like a lot of value across the board. You know, like I've actually thought about Curator many, many times just to, okay, I need card draw. Oh, Curator. You know, like because there's beasts in every single deck. So it's kind of an interesting thing. Okay, Noxious, your turn.
Yeah, so again, these top five cards are not in order of power, they're in order of what design I like. The first design I love the most is probably Crystal Core. That's a rogue quest that makes all your minions be, you know, five fives, which I think is you know, the fact that you have to complete it by playing four copies of a minion or four minions with the same name is really cool, because there's the whole Firefly type thing, right? You alluded to Firefly, that gives you a flame elemental. So there's Firefly, there's the Igneous elemental as well that gives you two copies of the little flame guy. So on its own, that's doable, but there's also the whole bouncy shenanigans that you can try to do with wisps and everything. Again, that may not be a good quest. Like, it might turn out to just be completely awful, but I'm willing to accept that that's the case. It's just one of those quests that's so fun to build around, because that's a real build around. It's not like, here's this normal tempo deck I have, and it works okay. Now let me jam this quest. No, here's this quest that I build at least like 6 to 8 slots of my deck around, and I try to make it happen as fast as I can. To actually milk it. So I thought that was pretty cool, design-wise. Then the other card is the Hydrologist, 2 mana 2/2 for Paladin. It's a Murloc for all that's worth. It's going to be worth something. Zoo Paladin is surprisingly good, even right now, like in terms of how consistently it gets its one drops out and it gets the hand buff with Grime Street Outfitter and everything. Having extra Murlocs can always be useful. It's not going to be too bad in that deck. And the fact that it gives you an extra card on top of that makes it a card just like... I wouldn't say it's exactly like the Primordial Glyph in that I play two of in every Paladin deck, but a 2/2 that draws me a card, I probably try to play two of in every Paladin deck. It's just something I can flexibly put everywhere, and it's something that Paladins sorely needed. I've had discussions with people about Argent Lance and people saying it's bad. Argent Lance is not a bad card. It's just Paladin sucks so hard that Argent Lens doesn't solve that, right? And I think this is another replacement. You know, we had Minibot, then Minibot rotated at the same time as it made Argent Lens irrelevant. And now Argent Lens is rotating, so now we have Hydrologist as another 2-cost answer for the early game, which I like. Stampede, apparently you and I, Chanman, are agreeing on that card. Yeah. 1 mana, lock and load. Thanks, you know, just thanks. it sucks that it's not spell-based.
Yes.
Because I would have loved to just make a control hunter that's spell-based, but it seems like we're going to be, you know, playing beasts, one-drop beasts, maybe. You know, we just cycle infinitely. We get a bunch of 6 and 7-cost minions from playing a bunch of useless ones. I'm down with that. And it fits with the hunter quest, which I think is good. What's your thoughts on Stampede, by the way, Zalei? Because clearly Chanaman and I like it.
Doesn't seem competitive to me. The idea is you exploit it with cheap beasts, right? Like the Hunter Quest. But I don't think you want this card in that deck, because this card draws a bunch of beasts, which you never want to play. Because your whole game plan is I play the quest on 1, then I play a bunch of beasts on turns 2 through 4, then I play the 5-drop on 5, maybe 6 if I'm unlucky, and then I play a bunch of 3-2 Raptors and stuff. Where in that do you have time to play a bunch of random 5-mana 2/5 beasts and stuff?
Okay, right. So I see. The point is...
Like, what turn am I playing Stampede on?
Probably 8 or 9, I guess. I don't know.
I think the game... I don't know. Like,
all right.
I just think I have better things to do with my mana than Stampede. Maybe I'm wrong. Like, well, the card does kind of draw a lot of cards for 1 mana in a card, so it's potentially very powerful in that sense. Mm-hmm. It's just that I don't know that fits with what I'm doing.
Yeah, so okay. I think it really comes down to what faction you're in. You're either in the faction that thinks that the Hunter quest is going to be super strong, and that's going to be the Hunter deck, or you're going to be in the faction where people don't think that just mid-range, just all the things that they added for Hunter are going to be enough of an improvement to make Hunter viable again. And for me, I'm a little bit...
Well, what about the Hunter Sucks faction?
Yeah, well, the Hunter Sucks faction.
I don't know which faction I am, but I'm not that big on the Hunter quest.
So I think I'm in the non-quest like faction. And
yeah,
because and if I'm there and I look at, like, I take a step back and I look at what has Hunter needed, like what are the weaknesses Hunter have had and what does Hunter need? I mean, one of the big ones has always been card draw, like huge ones. We've had to run just garbage cards, you know, like Elec and I mean, Quickshot had nice potential, but not usually for card draw. You know, it was used more for just straight removal.
It was card draw when you won the game right away.
Yeah, exactly, when you're winning the game anyways. So I like with Stampede for me, it's a card that finally gives Hunter the ability to just be able to reload, just to have ammo for an extra turn or two, which Hunter at times, that's all they've needed, you know, especially with some other additions that they're having in this set too. And so for me, it's not about cheap beasts. It's just a matter of late game. Can I get an extra 2 cards for myself and see what we can do with it?
I guess at this point, my question with Stampede is, because I don't think getting 2 extra cards is, like, random beasts especially,
yeah,
is particularly good. My question is, maybe this is more fit for a mid-range deck for the quest that goes, you know, I play Gerald Macaws and I play Fiery Bats and I play Alleycats, and then I draw those with Tolvir Warden in the mid-game, and then I then Stampede later on with the Raptors that come out of the quest. You know, like, because if you Stampede with a bunch of Raptors, it's still pretty good. You open up the sequence with one, and then you just cycle the Raptors nonstop. That's fine. And then you get just extra cards for afterwards.
Right.
If your 3/2s get, you know, cleaned up by Primordial Dragon or whatever. So maybe this is more of a I'm playing a quest in a mid-range deck type card.
Yeah, you could do that work, too. Yeah, that would work pretty well, too. But as long as it's a card drawing mechanic for Hunter, I'm all for it. Because Lock and Load, they tried it with Lock and Load, but the problem is it was like the wrong class to do Lock and Load. Because
Hunter, no, it was that it didn't give you spells. It just gave you beasts sometimes. If it gave me spells, I'd be good to go with that. But the fact that it's, oh, I can get a high main off of my Lock and Load Arcane Shot. Thank you. Like, now I'm just done. Like, I can't play this ever. That's what sucked the most. You can't go Cloaked Huntress into Infinite
Seekers. That's true. That's a good point. Yeah,
that was a problem.
You could, you know, maybe cycle into just damage, right? And finish games possibly and things like that.
Technically, yeah. But
That's, I guess that's true. But again, like, Lock and Load's gone, right? So this is, I think, even like replacing that and again, just providing something. Because Buzzard's such a waste. Like, every class has its own card, you know, drawing mechanic, and Hunter, you know, had one that was nerfed like years ago now and still hasn't been replaced. So that's kind of why I had it too.
Yeah. Well, my next card is Blood Bloom. Apparently you like that one too, Chema, so we'll talk about that afterwards.
But
we already talked about it a little bit, but I like the fact that Blood Bloom is like, Warlocks are getting away. Like, they already had Soulfire, which is very spooky, because if there's ever a world in which you're able to trade, you know, that health for a tempo play, like, my dream scenario with Blood Bloom is like a Molten Giant scenario. Like, where I just go, Blood Bloom, Doom, Molten, Tar. Like, hello, brother.
Oh my God, that's like, awesome. Oh,
shit. That is awesome.
You know, that's what I want to do with Blood Bloom at some point.
Dude, that is so cool.
If only you could heal back.
You could make that happen.
Yeah.
Well, you can do it in wild, right? Blood Bloom, Molten, Reno, hello. Like, or just one Molten, I guess, since you can't have two.
We'll settle for one.
Well, we'll settle for one.
You have two if you believe hard enough, not just don't sell yourself short. Anything's possible.
Sure. Let's do it.
Yeah.
So basically that's what Blood Bloom is for me. It's crazy good card design. And Ravnus Pterodax, I think this card might qualify as my keep an eye out for this bitch, because if it's good, it's gonna be way too good. Like, I think if this card is good, it's gonna be ridiculous. Like, a 4-mana adapt twice. Like, you thought Adaptazor was a problem, right? Like, you're like, oh, 5/6 that can't be targeted with, you know, 5/9, that's great. How about a 4/7 that can't be targeted by spells or hero powers on turn 4 that spawns an egg? Like, are you mad? That is,
that spawns a 5.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. It's completely bonkers. So, potentially broken card, but they probably tested it internally and found out it doesn't work as well as I'm, you know, thinking. So, that's the hope, right? That's the hope.
I mean, at least that combo is really, really good. And, you know, we've had kind of very powerful combos in the past, whether it was like Nerubian Egg and Void Terrors and things like that, that were just great. But very
when you double adapt, I like the Stealth Wind Fury combo, and then you put some Power Bombs like on that bad boy. Get to work. Woo! Exactly. Theo's gone, huh?
Yeah, Theo's gone. But
yeah, that's another issue with the whole like egg game plan, is that Power Bombing rotated out.
Mm-hmm. It's even less likely to be able to trigger it. Okay, with me, again, Blood Bloom, and, you know, I think we Stampede, of course. Time Warp, I just think that, you know, just that type of mechanic, and I think folks said it's a mechanic from Magic, is crazy powerful. I mean, it allows for mage. Any kind of ability that they added to the game, I feel like that allows for some kind of end game, some kind of possibly new type of end game, is, you know, is a good card from my standpoint, at least from the design-wise. Like, I want to see that. I want to see us be, you know, playing different types of things.
Yeah, it's diversity. It's sweet.
Yeah, exactly. Shadow Visions we talked about earlier, too. I think these cards, particularly Blood Bloom and Shadow Visions, are cards that have a lot of potential for the future, too. It's one of these cards that probably only gets better with new cards coming out. And given that we've got two more expansions, like full expansions with who knows how many spells per class, like these spells only get better. So I really like the versatility just from a design standpoint. When you design cards like that, that's very, very smart way to design things. And then lastly, Envenom Weapon is something cool that they added. You know, being able to add poisonous to your weapon is pretty cool. I think it might be too expensive, still at 3, but imagine just casting this and you have 2 swings of your weapon and you're playing some kind of tempo rogue. That's pretty sweet.
It's pretty sweet.
That's pretty sweet.
Can you prep that out?
Yeah. It's Shadow. I mean, you can Blade Flurry too and kill everything. I mean, you can do whatever, you know. That's,
no, doesn't, that work. Doesn't work.
Oh, doesn't
they
work?
They said it wouldn't work.
Oh, it doesn't work. Oh,
yeah, I'm pissed right now. But
oh, shit. That sucks.
That's why we nerfed Blade Flurry for Envenom. Wait, no, we didn't.
And then I think given that we had 2 repeats, I'll say like a just a consolation or whatever is Gentle Megasaur or the Murloc. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Dude, I think that card is maybe the single card that makes Murlocs viable.
I don't know, man. Have you played Zoo Paladin? Like, Zilli, did you play it early?
Anything
did I play Zoo Paladin? I don't know what that means.
Murloc Pally.
Murloc Pally. Just...
So, like, you play small-time recruits and Divine Favor, and you just draw your entire deck, and your Murlocs are, like, 5/7 by the end of the buffing, and you draw 0 cards every time. Like, it's ridiculous.
I gotta say, the Murloc stuff, they got a lot of powerful new cards. The Murloc tribe, historically, from my memory of Hearthstone, pretty much sucks. But there's a bunch of new good ones. I wonder if there's going to be some really powerful Murloc decks popping up. Maybe Hungry Crab becomes a thing in the same way that Galaga Crawler.
Think it will be. Yeah, I think it actually will
It's going to be interesting to see. Like, the Hydrologist that Noxious pointed out, and then... Maybe the Megasaur, the 3-mana 3/2 that discovers a Murloc, the 2-mana 2/3 that buffs a Murloc. Yep. That's a lot of powerful new Murlocs. So it's definitely something to look out for. Like, what's the best way to build a Murloc deck now?
Yeah.
Probably still jam a Finja in there.
That 2-mana 2/3 is ridiculous, man.
Finja is really close, but I think in the end you still jam one because there's so many of these new Murlocs that have Battlecry. So Finja negates that, but you still get a turn where you're putting 2 cards at once down, so it's good. But for me, anything where you can adapt multiple minions, like depending on what you have on the board, is potentially super, super good. And I think that just that added benefit, whether it's like a Bloodlust or it's just Divine Shield on all of them or, I mean, Stealth on all of them, something, right, that just keeps the Murloc train going.
Oh, man.
It's going to make it even better. So,
is Murloc Druid real with Evolving Spores and Megasaur? Let's go, baby.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that, but let's definitely go. I just think Shaman obviously having so many chances. And I build Murloc decks for every single class, and... You know, things that were kind of interesting, shadow stepping Megasaurs, and I don't know, things like that were kind of interesting. But I think just the fact that you can do adapt on 2 or 3 minions is pretty scary. If you get the right one, that's pretty nuts. So we'll have to see which which class or if Shaman is going to have 2 super good classes with Murlocs and Elementals. That's going to be pretty crazy to see. But okay, well, anyways, I think that concludes our top fives. And before we move on to global games, I do want to give a shout out to a bunch of folks that support the show. All our patrons, of course, that, right now Valuetown is 100% supported by the Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/Valuetown to go and make a pledge or support if you want us to obviously continue doing the show, help grow the show. But I do want to give a shout out to a few folks right now, our legendary producers, Mike T and Richard S, of course. And then a few others, Seb S, Ray Dan, Eli B, Alex F, David G, Bryce L, David A, Nicholas H, and Johannes von S. Thank you so much for doing that. Unfortunately, we've dropped below our milestone or for milestone, so we're not going to be doing it. And it's mainly because some of the folks that are, patrons, the payment methods decline. So, you subtract it whenever they decline for whatever reason. I don't know. It just happens from time to time for people.
They don't even cancel. Yeah, if they knew it was getting declined, they would put it back in, but they just...
Exactly. So, I guess check that out if you guys, aren't aware that maybe that's happening. I also want to mention that I added a new milestone for that's Mechatorp Workshop related. Given that so many people love Mechatorps, me and Noxious were talking that we wanted to add a milestone where we would do a special additional Mechatorps, video kind of mini episode for patrons that are, interested in that. So take a look at that. That's like a milestone that's after Smilestone. And if you guys are interested in that, help us try to achieve that. Also, we're available on iTunes, and I just want to let folks know that you can find us there and help out the show also if you go and leave us a nice review, a 5-star review, and some comments. A lot of people have done that in the past this week. Unfortunately, we don't have anybody this week, so we got to hopefully get some folks next week to do that. But yeah, we have a lot of audio listeners too, so I just want to kind of throw that out there for folks. And thanks everybody for supporting the show. We've been having a lot of great interaction with people emailing us and doing all those things. So it's been really a wonderful time for the show. Let's talk about global games, guys. We've been talking about global games maybe the last couple weeks, and it just seems like the drama just keeps going. But before we jump into the drama, the results finally came out for the teams, the national teams. And Zalay, I didn't see on.
Yeah,
there,
not
man.
Quite.
I didn't see on.
Yeah, there. I lost a bet to the Young Savage, man. I had a bet going with him over which one of us. Like, obviously, Fire Bat and Dog are always getting the first two slots, and then he beat me. I think he managed to stream some that week, and I was like, I was traveling a lot, and I just didn't get any promotional work done really for myself. So feels bad. He won. He got me.
He got you.
But pretty good team for NA.
Yeah.
I like their chances.
Super strong team. Yeah, I would say. It's hard to go through all these teams, guys. There's like a million teams. But I think it's going to be pretty competitive. I think overall, in the end, it's going to be a super competitive event. But go ahead and check
that
out. I think
it's USA versus Russia, right? Or, no, there's a few other teams. There's some European teams that are really good. Yeah. Even from tiny countries.
I got to dismiss like the rest of the world. You're like,
yeah,
all right.
No, look at all these countries.
A lot of these teams I kind of do want to dismiss. Like when I looked at global games, it was hard not to be bitter because I see so many people that are like, I have never heard of this guy. And, I work pretty hard at Hearthstone. Yeah, I get some pretty good results, and it's like, and I would love to get a chance to play. But at the same time, I realize it's kind of fair because, like, I'm from the U.S. I get a lot of opportunities to compete and stuff, and a lot of these guys haven't had a lot of opportunities. And so, like, there's real downsides to living in, random country that's far away from where things are happening. And so, it's Blizzard kind of throwing them a bone. You get a chance to compete, too. So it's fair. Like, I shouldn't be too bitter, I guess, but I don't know. I want to play.
Of course. The whole point is just to be more inclusive with everybody, right? And just have as many. I mean, they could have increased the team size maybe, but I don't know what they have in store for the format and all that good stuff. But so, leading up to this, there was a lot of, I guess some threats of if so-and-so is on the team, if Ponyhop is on the team, then, I'll be stepping down. And we saw that basically with the German team. So originally, the German team did not look like this, okay? The German team actually had Ponyhof and Synthelol as representatives for Germany.
And this team got so much better.
It improved a little bit.
Yeah. Wow!
It improved quite a bit. Leading up to it, so we had, Forsen sticking to his word. Forsen said that he would not compete, and he did step down from it. Little did he know that Ponyhof would eliminate himself from all of this stuff, so he gave him a spot to
show. I'm not sure,
Forsen,
man. I don't think they would have done this.
I know.
I don't think they would have ever, removed Ponyhof, despite the little shenanigans,
of course, the little words
that were exchanged, had there not been such an uproar.
I think Ferguson came off looking so smart in this whole thing. Like he probably didn't really want to play in the tournament anyways. The amount of money he makes and the amount something like this is worth. Like, he's like, is this really worth my time? And then he's like, wait a minute. I could just make everyone love me and like bash on Ponyhof. It's just like the best PR move ever. And I mean that with just full respect and compliments to Forsen. I wish I had thought of such a great idea, good job, man. Round of applause.
I think you're 10
out of 10.
You're probably right with that one.
I think it was a positive impact on the community, what he did. Like, I don't think it was entirely selfish. I think it was, I think he did a good thing for the community and himself. It was good for everyone. Just 2 thumbs up. Good job, man. So smart.
And Sho got the spot, too. So, Sho being obviously
Sho's my bro
for the community, too. So he got to benefit from that. But just to give you a quick lowdown of what happened with the Ponyhof and Synthelol thing. They had an exchange. Actually, one of them was a Twitter, or not Twitter post. Was it a Discord post? I think it was actual Discord post, I believe, which, Ponyhof was, ribbing Synthelol, I guess the comment was whether he had two dads versus his mom or, that whole comment. And then, you know, since a little on his stream, just on a video and a clip, of course, got spread everywhere, you know, was, you know, made some remarks that involved, you know, Hitler and things like that, that were definitely inappropriate. And that led to Blizzard removing them from the competition based on behavioral reasons. And so Noxious, you think that they wouldn't have removed them if it hadn't, you know, the community wasn't, or at least some of the community wasn't.
No, dude, that stuff was not like they weren't. I'm sure they weren't monitoring anything like remotely as close as they did after the uproar. After the uproar, they probably had like a media guy be like, "Oh, what are they saying? Can we find a reason to disqualify them?" And then disqualify Ponyhoff, and they were like, "Yeah, here it is. This is the thing." They're like, "Well, shit, Sintel also said something inappropriate. We have to throw him out too." So they pitched them both out and replaced them. That's exactly what happened.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, Sintel all would have been fine, and so would Ponyhoff if it weren't for, you know, the points that people raised about Ponyhoff's past. Sintel all kind of got screwed by the whole Ponyhoff thing happening, but, you know, he did say the words himself, and they were offensive, and so, you know, it's a nice reminder to people out there that, you know, don't when rage. You're being recorded, it matters what you say, right?
Yeah, or just anything generally. And all you say can be held against you, right?
Yeah.
In the court of law.
Yeah.
Or in the Blizzard, you know, global games.
Exactly. So, it's unfortunate for the, or at least, you know, people in that situation. But the folks that did benefit were Super JJ and, is it Camlan? Is that how you pronounce that? C4?
No, I think, was it Life Coach? I don't think Life Coach.
Oh, it was a Life Coach?
Maybe I might be misremembering.
Oh, Life Coach and
I thought Life Coach made the
it wasn't in there. I don't.
Oh,
think.
Oh, okay. So it was Life Coach and Super JJ. Okay, I didn't realize it was both of them. Okay,
it's basically the Gwench boys. The Gwench boys.
The Gwench boys.
But I feel like this was a win for the Hearthstone community as a whole. It was like people took a stand for something, and we found an excuse to get what we wanted. You know. Well, I'll take it. That's a victory.
You'll take it. Oh man. Okay. All right. Okay, but I think definitely the moral of the story here is, you know, at least don't rage, or at least don't rage on video. But in general, like getting mad over shit like that, I don't. You know, there's consequences for that at times, so it's not worth it many times. Because that video, man, he was so upset. He was upset at something about practicing. I think first, like I think
Who
maybe
was?
Sentinel, like Sentinel? In that video,
okay.
Yeah, I think it was. Maybe I think it had to do with Pony and maybe him saying that they didn't want to practice as a group or something like that. I'm not sure if it was directed at Pony or not, but it kind of led to him just going into a crazy rage frenzy over what Pony said. So just chill out, guys. Life's, you know, sometimes it's just better off not to, you know, not to say anything, right? Than to potentially put yourself in a situation where you get removed from an awesome event. This event is, what's the prize pool on this event? Do you guys know?
No idea.
I'm not sure. Yeah. I haven't really looked into it.
Right? It's gotta be.
You gotta imagine there's some money behind it. Like it's a Blizzard thing.
It's gotta be.
And even without the money, it's something you want to do. It's
cool. Represent your country. Yeah. Who knew you could represent your country? Like represent your country playing Hearthstone in that fashion. That's really, really cool. Okay. Q&A, guys. Let's see any questions you guys have this week. We've got three questions, which is cool. Some from a week ago that we didn't quite get to. So Shizza Deezer asks, what have been the least skillful aggro decks of all times? What have been the most skillful decks of all times?
Huh. Aggro Shaman of the, you know, recently was one of the most skillful decks of all time, I think.
Yeah, most skillful. Okay. We're not kidding. Okay. Most skillful aggro decks of all time, aggro shaman of recent memory.
Okay, yeah, I'll give you that.
I agree with that.
And I want to say Pyro Warrior is one of the least skillful.
Yep, on the flip side, same thing. Like, you have like the most brain-dead deck ever created. And by the way, that deck was also completely like skill-less back before Nax. You know, that deck existed in its near entirety before Belcher. It was still a brain-dead deck to pilot, and almost. It hasn't really changed much, so.
It's pretty close. Yeah, I think you guys are right. I think Death Rattle Hunter was pretty bad, too. Or pretty...
Yeah, the Undertaker
too.
Was...
Yeah, that's pretty brainless, too.
Once you figure out the mulligan for Undertaker, the rest kind of took care of itself.
Yeah, it was really tough. It's really tough pushing Hero Power, too, pretty much.
Well, actually, like a lot of people actually messed up the Hero Power Ring and Hunter more than I think people messed up the Hero Power Ring and Hunter aggro back then more than they mess up Pirate Warrior to face nowadays. Mm-hmm. Like when you see people jamming weapons to face without trading on turn two and you have a two drop nowadays and they still win. You know, Hunter Taker didn't have the luxury of missing damage against, like, you know, Control Warrior in some cases. So there were still, I'd argue that it was more difficult to play, even though the edge was, you know, not crazy.
Yeah.
I'd say Zoo generally tends to be one of the harder aggro decks to play. There are just a lot of decisions. I think kind of what makes the difference between an aggro deck being harder to play versus easier is whether it can change roles. Pirate Warrior is like almost always the aggressor, and therefore it's fairly straightforward to play. There's a lot of going face, not a whole lot too much more going on than that. People still mess it up though routinely. Even legend level players routinely mess up with Pirate Warrior. So even though we're calling it a low skill deck, I think there's more skill to it than people realize for sure. But a deck like Aggro Shaman, the reason it's a higher skill deck and harder to play is because the different matchups are more different. You're not just the aggro in every matchup. For instance, when you play Aggro Shaman against Pirate Warrior, all of a sudden you're a control deck and your game plan is to try and get four totems in place. You can roll a taunt totem every turn and that kind of thing. And all of a sudden you're happy to Lava Burst their Frothing Berserker, even though you're paying a 5-mana card that's supposed to go face to kill a 3-mana minion. You're falling behind by a full innervate. Like, it's a huge deal, right? That's awful. But actually that's contributed to your game plan very efficiently. That's a thing you do all the time and don't even feel bad about.
Yeah. That's true. There's not that many to choose from, to be honest, but definitely the most recent Shaman. I think your point about switching roles is great. Backspace Rogue? Backspace Rogue was...
Aggro Rogue?
Yeah.
That one is tough to... Well, it was tough to play.
But it's only one role, though. I mean, you are just going, you know, just full speed ahead and...
Well, have you played Water Rogue, like the recent list with the coin version with double counterfeit coin? And Edwin. So there's like two ways to build Water Rogue, and I feel like the one that runs double counterfeit coin is reminiscent in some fashion of the old Backspace. The only difference is without Cold Oracles, you know, it's not Backspace Rogue. You just can't afford to give a lot of decks card draw nowadays. Yeah. You die to aggro if you give that to them, and you can't give it to Reno, clearly. Because
still probably easier than Shaman, yeah. Shaman was definitely...
I know, I say the Water Rogue is tough. It's really tough compared to... like something like Warrior, and I think it falls on the equal spectrum for Shaman.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
I do want to say just one last thing. The old Facehunter was actually pretty hard to play, even though it was like always the beatdown in every matchup. Just the old like Mad Scientist, Explosive Trap, Unleash the Hounds. Just the whole like planning out your resources to have the right amount of damage on the right turn to finish them off before they finish you off. There was a lot of math, a lot of racing. It was a pretty tricky deck to play, even though it's always, you know, the beatdown. You're never control with that deck.
Yeah. Aggro decks generally, I think a lot of folks don't realize, is very unforgiving. You can't make mistakes. You make a mistake, it's over. Or you don't get many options because there's no removing. You're going to have to win in an extra turn, and a lot of these aggro decks are not made to have an extra turn to win. Jason R. asked, who should the first Hearthstone hero be in Heroes of the Storm? For example, Don Honcho, the Kazak, is somebody Hearthstone has added that doesn't exist in WoW until it was in Hearthstone first.
Patches.
Probably Reno, right? I think
no,
Reno.
No. It's got to be Patches, bro. And he's got to be like a baller assassin that summons more Patches. God.
He's got the charge ability, right?
Yeah, he's
definitely
just like,
got the charge ability.
Yeah, he charges to you, and when you ult, he just goes, I'm in charge now, and just summons like seven copies of Small Time Buccaneer and like Jam.
Okay. All right. There's not many to choose from. Like, it's a League of Explorer cast, and oh, it could be the Karazhan cast. Barnes and...
No, honestly,
there's not exciting.
Emperor Thorson could be cool.
Oh, okay.
But he wasn't WoW, though. I'll say that much. You know, he was a thing.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Probably one of those.
I guess Reno's not a bad idea. Finley, isn't
Reno? Could have a whip, maybe, right? Or something like that.
Didn't they make a Hearthstone character in there?
Yeah, Finley. Sir Finley Merkleton is.
Yeah, Finley is in there, right? I'm not crazy.
Yeah, Sir Finley.
Okay.
Sir Finley's not a WoW character.
No, he's not.
Yeah.
You could make Sir Finley.
Yeah. One of those. I mean, the only problem with the Heroes of the Storm is you have to figure out abilities for these characters. So a lot of stuff from Karazhan probably wouldn't fit. It's just not very thematically combatant, I guess you could say. So it'd be something from League of Explorers. Okay, Stuart P. asks, what now that we are at week, now that we're at a week or less from the big release, obviously, this is during the week, what deck archetypes are you guys going to try, basically most excited for and going to try? It says he's excited about the Hunter cards and to try out the Hunter and the Priest, and excited to try Raptor Hunter and Undead Control Priest. Okay, interesting.
I don't know what those are.
Yeah, I'm not even sure what... I mean, Raptor Hunter's obvious, but I'm not sure what Undead Control Priest... Maybe that's like Bishop and...
Death Rattle. I think that's what it is. Death Rattle. Bishop.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so I guess what decks are you guys going to try out on day one? And then what decks do you think will be oppressive if you were just to make a bold prediction?
Well, my prediction for oppressive would be Zoo, I guess.
Somebody's phone's ringing.
Yeah, that's me. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
And I want to try out Secret Mage. I kind of doubt that it's that good, but I don't know. Nobody's talking about it, and it looks pretty interesting to me with Arcanologist coming out. So yeah. I want to see what's up.
Okay.
Buff Paladin is my choice. Buff Pally and Quest, like the Rogue Quest, those are the decks I'm looking forward to the most. Top tier decks, certainly not what I don't anticipate them to be, but I still want to try them out. As far as top tier decks, I think Zoo is going to be there. Without a Druid Drake, I'm not sure how Druid catches up on card draw. Like, the more I think about that class, like, Jade Druid is fine, but it's missing out, like, that crazy swipe removal that sometimes carried it into the mid game with Drake, so... Yeah.
For me, the first day, I think I'll probably run the Rogue at some point for sure, just because I'm just curious about that and just how powerful some of the balancing will be. And you know, the interesting part about the quest, you can just finish the quest by playing 4/2 ofs, you know, or just x/2 ofs, right? And complete it that way. Everybody's always thinking about, obviously, balancing and doing it super, super fast, but you can actually naturally do it too, which is an interesting way of looking at it. So I'll probably do that, and then probably try out the Freeze Mage Giant thing just to see if it's as powerful as I think it's going to be. Oppressive wise, I don't know. What do you guys think will be oppressive? I think it's possible.
So hard to say, right?
Yeah. Oppressive is a really big word. Yeah. Like, we've had oppressive decks in the past, and I don't know that I would call any deck that we've seen, that we see coming up, oppressive. But every quest has the potential to create an oppressive archetype, assuming it's too easy to complete and too consistent. That's just the way we'll put it. If one quest is just way above power level, that quest becomes potentially oppressive as an archetype. So,
well, I think oppressive decks too, like the one that we saw most recently, like with Shaman, is, I mean, it's a deck that does well against every type of archetype, and it, you know, like, has a chance at winning even against the worst archetype, and that's very, very hard to come by. The quest, in fact, any kind of quest deck, I don't think it's possible. Like, the quests are designed to be, you know, potentially later and things like that. So maybe it's not possible. Anything's possible. So, but generally speaking, I think the design in which they created this, it's not made to be good against everything. Like, Pirate Warrior is there to, like, it has to exist, right? Just to keep some things in place, and that's not going anywhere. I mean, that's always going to be around. So it's hard for me to see that happening again. Which is good, because it sucked whenever it happened.
I'm hoping, like, so, yeah.
Yeah.
And there was a discussion recently with Reyna. We're saying, what deck do you think is going to be oppressive? Jade Druid with Tar Creepers, rip. And yeah, it's just, here's Jade Druid, here's the defensive
tool. Yeah, I think that's going to be strong.
Here's me, you know, it's like...
I think that's going to be strong, but there's so many tempo decks that are available that, even with the Tar Creeper, I think that, you know, there's enough tempo and burst to kill a Jade Druid. Not have Jade Druid win, like, crazy amounts of, like, a large percent of the time against those type of decks. So that's not the only change that they need to be able to become super strong like that. But you know, Tar Creeper is something that I would add to Jade Druid for sure. Okay, guys. Well, that's a good episode, man. We almost went 2 hours there, which is pretty crazy. But there's a lot to talk about. Exciting day tomorrow. But Zalay, awesome having you back, buddy. It's always fun.
Thanks for having me. I love the show.
Yeah. You want to do any shout outs? Where can people find you?
At LG Zalay on Twitter. Oh, I have a new YouTube. So if you go to my Twitch channel and type exclamation mark YouTube in the chat, it'll make a link to the YouTube channel. I don't think there's an easy to say name for it. I don't know.
Why, what is it?
WXZYYS8876.
Go to twitch.tv/ZalayHS, type exclamation mark YouTube in the chat, and click that link, and you're good to go.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, definitely check that out. So you're making videos regularly, or you just got like an editor now to help you out with some.
I got an editor working on stuff from my stream, basically. Cool. It's kind of like the best parts of my stream is the gist of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good stuff. So awesome. Noxious, how about you?
Noxious GLHF on YouTube and Noxious _ GG on Twitch. I've been actually streaming and having quite a bit of fun, honestly. Like, Wild is surprisingly enjoyable. Mm-hmm, if you don't care about your win rate, honestly, like, just play whatever meme. Because honestly, Standard is not enjoyable, even if you don't care about your win rate, because you don't find diversity. Like, there's nothing. It's always the same damn two decks. So at least when you go to Wild, you can play that Mill Rogue and lose to three different things. But they're different. That's good.
It's definitely good.
Okay.
And I'll round things off by thanking the two of you guys for obviously doing the show. One last disclaimer, since it's the last day. If you like Dragon Priest, you better play the hell out of it in the next few hours. Ooh. Because it is going to be gone in the next few hours. So I just want to let the Priest players out there know. And if you missed any of the show, you can check it out on youtube.com/ChamMV in another hour or two. All our past episodes, we've done 150. Well, 16 now of them. You can check out there too. They're all available there. And if you're an iTunes listener or you like to listen on audio on the way to work, anything like that, we're available on iTunes. If you search for Valleytown or if you search for Hearthstone, you'll find us, as well as Google Podcasts and SoundCloud. So got all those bases covered too. You can follow the show's Twitter account at ValleytownGG and follow all of our Twitters too. They're all in the overlays here. And again, thanks to all our patrons. You guys are awesome supporting the show, and we wouldn't be able to do this without you guys. But for this week, that's going to be it. So for Zalay, Noxious, and myself, ChamMV, we'll see you next time.